extradition. Brian Doyle agreed to be transferred from Maryland to Florida. He was arrested Monday as part of a sting operation. Doyle, a press officer for the Department of Homeland Security, solicited sex from someone online he thought was a 14-year-old girl. He faces 7 counts of seducing a child, plus charges of sending improper materials to a minor. The Capitol Hill police are ratcheting up the war of words in the Cynthia McKinney matter. A Capitol Police spokesman accused Congresswoman McKinney of acting like, quote, the high and haughty, unquote. Capitol Police Chief Terrence Gaynor said McKinney should have stopped when his officer grabbed her from behind. McKinney still believes the matter is more about racial profiling than anything else. She called the incident, quote, much ado about a hairdo, unquote. It's a little like closing the barn door after the horses are gone, but 4 Republicans are joining 79 Democrats in the House of Representatives to demand a debate about the Iraq War. The House members are demanding that the debate be sent to the House floor over the objection of the Republican leadership. The group needs a total of 218 signatures in order to have the debate. Workers in Indonesia protested Tuesday. The working people showed their displeasure at their government's attempts to make it harder for them to exist. A new labor bill in Indonesia tries to take away those citizens' rights to go on strike. It also seeks to cut wages and benefits. Labor unions in the country say the bill allows too much outsourcing and lets employers circumvent unions. The Pentagon is complaining about a video making the rounds on the internet in the Middle East that shows people pulling a part of a body out of a crashed American helicopter. The Defense Department said Tuesday that it is outraged that, quote, the terrorists continue to demonstrate their immoral disregard for human dignity and life, unquote. George Bush's war on the people of Iraq has thus far claimed the lives of as many as 100,000 civilians. Amnesty International provided more evidence Tuesday that the CIA is using secret flights to kidnap and torture people in the so-called war on terror. The report, Below the Radar, Secret Flights to Torture and Disappearance, documents case after case of CIA-sponsored misconduct involving a host of other countries, including the UK and other European nations' airspace. Amnesty's report gives evidence of more than 1,000 of the secret flights. Today in New Orleans, Mayor Ray Nagin suspended installation of FEMA trailers. Apparently, residents who would be neighbors of the Katrina survivors objected to locating the trailers so close to affluent neighborhoods. One resident, Edward Markle, said, quote, I won't be able to take a bath without them seeing me, unquote. This is news on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP. That's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of 5 corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Determined not to leave quietly, disgraced and resigning Congressman Tom DeLay said he would file ethics charges against Cynthia McKinney if no other congressman does for the incident she had with Capitol Police. DeLay was apparently incensed that no ethics complaint had been filed, saying, quote, had it been Tom DeLay, the ethics committee would have met the next day, unquote. A report released today by Amnesty International documents the use of front companies and private aircraft for the action of rendition, which is essentially government-sanctioned kidnapping and transport to secret prisons. The report detailed the plight of 3 Yemeni nationals who were sent to a number of secret prisons over the course of 18 months. They reported saying all the guards at each location were Americans. Apple Computer unveiled software today that would enable its Mac operating system to run, yes, that's right, Windows XP. The computer program called Boot Camp would require the user to reboot the system to switch between Mac and Windows operating systems. The computer company hopes that this will help make it more than its usual 3 or 4% market share. Your tax dollars at work. In 2005, members of Congress squandered more of your money. Citizens Against Government Waste released its 2006 Congressional Pig Book Tuesday. The report details a host of pet projects congressmen use to appease their constituents. Some of the highlights? Several million dollars went to help finance the World Toilet Summit. $500,000 went for a teapot museum in Sparta, North Carolina. In all, the report documents over $13 billion worth of wasted money. And that's the news. On the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm John Fox.
Now, Head-On with Bob Kincaid. Head-On is brought to you every night by the West Virginia District Council of Carpenters and Millwrights. Union Carpenters and Millwrights, they're building the American dream. Free speech isn't free if you don't use it, so call Bob now at 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Now, here's Bob Kincaid on the Head-On Radio Network.
Hey, good evening. Well, it's Wednesday night. You know what that means. Of course you do. And I have got a boatload of stuff for tonight's prayer meeting edition of Head On with Bob Kincaid, me. At the controls, of course, since it's not baseball practice night, the lovely Agnes, my darling wife, she'll take your calls at 877-443-2366, 877, the number 4, Head On. And, you know, if you've got something that I don't have, I want to know about it. So learn it, know it, use it. Make use of the resources that we try to provide. This is Wednesday, of course. Yes, dear? Never mind. Now, I want to share an email with you. Oh, and I should tell you, here in a few minutes, we will be having an interview. Going to have a guest join us, an author. Tell you about a new book that's out. A very valuable and very necessary piece of history. The name of the book is The Heart Has Reasons: Holocaust Rescuers and Their Stories of Courage by Mark Klempner. And it is a fascinating book, published by the Pilgrim Press of Cleveland, Ohio. I truly do believe you will find it enjoyable, and I would imagine that if you go through the Amazon.com or Powell's or Barnes & Noble links that are provided at WhiteRoseSociety.org, it'll be an easy purchase for you. What Mark Klempner did is he went to Holland and interviewed not Holocaust survivors, but rather the people who helped others survive the Holocaust, the people who participated quietly, people who don't view themselves as heroes, but were, in fact, heroes of the First Order, who resisted the Nazi urge to commit murders and other atrocities simply by not cooperating, simply by refusing to follow the law and inform on a segment of human beings who were wanted by the Nazis just because of their genetic makeup. Jewish people. Roma, the homosexual community. You get the idea. So we'll be joined here in a very short period of time by Mark Klempner to discuss the book. In the interim, however, I want to share with you, based on, you know, we've been talking about the so-called immigration debate, and I think I've made it abundantly clear what a phony I think this debate is, what a ginned-up piece of garbage. But I received an email that really struck me from a listener by the name of David in Santa Barbara, California. I was moved. David wrote, I'm a 27-year-old father of two, of both Mexican and U.S. nationalities. I lived all my life in Ciudad Juarez, Mexico. My education since high school was in El Paso, Texas. I used to cross every day from Mexico to the U.S. and study and work and then go back. I currently work in a software company in Santa Barbara, California, and I listen to RadioPower.org on iTunes every day. See, if you can't get the show live, it's always there for you the next day from 3 p.m. to 6 p.m. Eastern. I guess that would be noon to 3 Pacific on RadioPower.org. But David says, I can definitely say that of the three programs I listen to, Tom Hartman, Bob Kincaid, and the Young Turks, you're the only one that understands the issue. Tom Hartman thinks of the problem in economic and job-related terms. The Young Turks, since they're from L.A., they do not talk much of the problem because they're immersed in the immigrant culture. But you're the only one that understands the human factor in the issue. I live close to and have close relationships with illegal immigrants. I don't call them immigrants. I call them Juan, Verena, Pablo. They're from Mexico and I'm from Mexico. The only difference between us is where we were born. And this makes all the difference in the world to this society. I don't believe it's fair that I'm privileged and my neighbor works 10 times harder than I for the same objective, which is a decent life. Like I said, I was moved. I'll be honest, I haven't heard what Tom has said about the so-called immigration debate, and the Young Turks and I, we're on at the same time, roughly, so I haven't heard them either. But I do know that, like I said, this is one of the more successful wedge issues that the Republican Party has used, because for some reason or another, this has managed to a certain extent, split liberals and progressives. And I, for the life of me, don't understand it. You know, when Lou Dobbs talks about our broken borders, what the hell is a border anyway? They're artificial. They're not real. They don't exist. Now, are you talking about the Rio Grande? It's a river. It's not the difference between one side of the Rio Grande and the other is a construct. Just one moment, please. We're going to have some dead air for a sec. One more thing that I forgot about. See, the phone doesn't ring in the studio. It only beeps during the show. So I've got a separate phone that rings, so when we're not on the air, I can actually hear the phone ring. I forgot to unplug it. Highly professional radio. I know. Yeah, well, you know, someday we'll have somebody full-time on staff whose only job is to make sure that Doofus Bob didn't forget to unplug the phone again. I'm not fooling with it. Agnes is too short to be able to reach the stuff that needs to be unplugged, but now it's I'm fooling with her stuff. Life. No, but in seriousness, I'll bet you that was our guest. I hope he will call back. Oh, wait a minute. I've screwed something else up. Stand by. No, honey, you're not doing it. Time out.
On this every other Wednesday afternoon discussion club, we are going to have more to discuss on this every other Wednesday afternoon than we ever had on any other every other Wednesday afternoon.
Oh, for heaven's sakes. You know, if I had any sense at all, I would have taken a break then. You'd be listening to PSAs instead of me sitting here. So we're going to do that. And now there's a cat. There's a cat because there's a bird tweeting outside the window. Oh, somebody pray, okay? This is prayer meeting edition. Somebody pray because we're off to a weird start tonight, and I apologize for that. But we will get it right. I promise. Why? Because we have to.
God hates us right now.
No, God is not mad at us. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
The president came out and talked about the Iraq War and how he had a strategy to win the peace. I have some exclusive audio. This is actually him preparing for the speech in front of the mirror. This is him laying out the strategy for Iraq.
That was the most coherent thing I've heard him say in ages, man.
What? You know, if he really spoke that way, it would be so much better for us all. Because at least then we would know that he's an incoherent bastard. We could have him locked up.
And that's just a taste of what Bruce and I got up to last weekend. Come and join us next weekend, Saturday nights, 10 p.m. Eastern. To get the stream details, go to fourthestateradio.com. That's fourthestateradio.com.
Because liberals built America. Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. God is in his heaven, apparently, because we've gotten some things worked out and things are fixed. And we are joined on the phone at this point in time by Mark Klempner, author of The Heart Has Reasons, Holocaust Rescuers and Their Stories of Courage. Are you there, Mark?
Yes, I'm here. Hi, Bob.
Thank you very kindly for joining us this evening.
My pleasure.
How long's the book been out?
Just been out. It just came out like March 30th.
Well, I had an advance copy, of course, and I have very much enjoyed reading it. Let's start with the basics. What moved? This was a heck of a project, quite an undertaking on your part. What moved you to do it?
Well, partly because my dad is a survivor. He got out of Poland on the last boat August 25th, 1939. 1 week later, the Nazis invaded, and all his relatives and friends left behind were perished. And I, you know, I grew up in the shadow of the Holocaust, and I wanted to come to terms with it because it was a really scary thing in my childhood. And I thought by talking to these heroic people who weren't afraid at that time, who had the presence of mind and the generosity of spirit to help their neighbors and help even strangers who were being targeted by the Nazis, I thought that would be kind of a backdoor to coming to terms with the Holocaust.
Now, you said you grew up with it sort of in the background in your childhood. Had you pursued a career in anything relating to the topic, or did this come sort of from an oblique direction?
Absolutely not. In fact, I was a professional musician, and I wound up being a studio guitarist in L.A. And that's another piece of what drew me to the project, because for 10 years I was there in Hollywood, and I got really sick of all the people wanting money, fame, you know, wanting to make it me first, the one with the most toys wins. And unconsciously, I think I was searching for an antidote to all that self-aggrandizement. When I met the Rescuers, they just blew me away because they lived by an entirely different value system. And right away, they became kind of like role models to me for a different way of life.
Well, one of the things that struck me in reading your book, Mark, was the fact that you and I don't think there's any doubt that you and I and most anyone who will pick up the book would consider these people heroes of the First Order. But that's not how they viewed themselves, is it?
No, they're very humble, and they tend to say, oh, it's just the human thing to do. But that makes you wonder, you know, they must have a higher standard of what it is to be human than is prevalent in the world, because most human beings didn't do anything.
Well, Mark, my exposure to the Holland of the Nazi occupation largely consisted prior to your book of two things. One, the Diary of Anne Frank,
right,
and another book called The Hiding Place by a lady named Corrie Ten Boom.
Mm-hmm.
It seems that there was something different going on in the Netherlands. Were you able to put some sort of a finger on that?
Well, actually, the Netherlands was had the lowest survival rate in Western Europe. A lot of people think, and I certainly thought, that it must have been a good place for Jews because, you know, we've read the Diary of Anne Frank and Corrie Ten Boom. But you got to remember that both Anne Frank and Corrie Ten Boom were arrested, and Anne Frank died, and Corrie Ten Boom wound up in Ravensbrück concentration camp, as did some of the people I interviewed. So it was a tough place, and I explained the reasons why in the book.
Why then did you look to the Netherlands?
Well, I was ignorant because I thought that it would just be too scary to go to Poland, you know, the stand on the soil where my relatives and my father's friends and everything, where they were all hunted down by the Nazis and shot and killed and burned. It was just too much for me to contemplate. So I thought going to the Netherlands would be kind of not as heavy, but it was as heavy.
Yes. The stories that you tell of ordinary individuals, I've highlighted some places in the text. I was particularly moved by Kees Veenstra's story. You know, this matter of resistance on a bicycle is the way I characterized it. We're talking about ordinary people doing extraordinary things through what seemed to me largely ordinary actions. Is there a lesson beyond simply never forget? Is there a lesson for the modern world in this?
Oh yeah, there's a lot of lessons. When people say never forget or never again, a lot of times they're thinking in a narrow way. I've met some Jewish people, and I'm Jewish, you know, who are thinking never again will the Jews go through this. But the whole point is that one group needs to help another, that the vulnerable group needs to be helped by people who are not vulnerable. And that's a big lesson, especially now when we see, for instance, certain Muslims being, you know, arrested without recourse to a trial, and the evidence is very sketchy. and they're just sitting in jails. You know, we as a society, you know, we have to do something about this kind of, this overreaching of the police and the security forces, because, you know, next it'll be, you know, it'll be us. I mean, it'll be the activists, it'll be the liberals, whatever. I mean, we have to see that the rescuers activated my activism, acutely aware that democracy is not a spectator sport, that we all have to be vigilant and do our part to make sure that our society doesn't go off the track and start turning into a kind of fascist society.
Well, I find it interesting that you did make that you just made a rather significant leap, Mark, in taking it from, and I've talked with a number of people who have experience in the history and such of this particular topic, and never again seems to be narrowed by some people as never again to the Jewish people.
Mm-hmm.
But you say, am I correct in my interpretation that you're suggesting that never again means never again should any particular race of people be sought out for slaughter?
Exactly. And I mean, it's happening. I mean, we have the situation in Africa, which is horrendous. And that's where we should be pouring our money rather than into, you know, Iraq, because there's, you know, hundreds of thousands of people have been slaughtered in this ridiculous, you know, terrible, tragic loss of life. And, you know, that's just not where we're putting our attention, but it should be if we really take the never again seriously.
Well, one of the other things that I think you touch on in the book, the Jewish Council and the people who actually cooperated with the Nazis, do you have any kind of an insight on why that happened?
Well, that's very simple. You know, there's always people who are short-sighted and they just want to cover their own butt, and they want to, you know, they want to do what will give them an immediate sense of safety. So what happened with the Jewish Council, which, you know, could have, you know, this replays constantly in our world. The Nazis basically decided that the Jews would resist their orders if they came directly from the Nazis. So they found some Jewish leaders who would be willing to kind of be middlemen, and then the Nazis would tell them what they wanted done, and then the Jewish leaders would announce to the community, you know, please report to, you know, have your, you know, deportation papers stamped or whatever. And this was just tragic because they were thinking, you know, they would be saving their own skin, because if they worked for the Jewish Council, they got a deferment from being deported. But in the end, they were all deported. So I think we need to look at the broader lesson, which is that we can't be short-sighted. We really have to just think about the overall good and what's really good for everybody, not just getting our own little privileged perks and kind of like having a little umbrella over our own lives while everybody else goes to hell.
When you go along to get along, after a while, that falls apart, doesn't it?
And usually you just wind up being in the same boat as the people who you missed the opportunity to protect.
What when the deportations took place, Mark? You know, we hear about Birkenau and Bergen-Belsen and Dachau and Auschwitz. Was there a centralized deportation point for the Jews in the Netherlands?
Well, they were taken to a kind of a transit camp called Westerbork. That's where Corrie Ten Boom went. That's where many of the people who I interviewed spent some time in. That's where Anne Frank went. So yeah, that was where you were taken, and then you would be sent to Auschwitz and these other death camps.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. Where these extraordinary actions by seemingly ordinary people? Did you find any common thread among them? Was there anything that seemed to make it more likely that these people would move toward being rescuers? I mean, was
sure. Well, first of all, it takes a special kind of person to just be able to see reality. A lot of us, we want to put our heads in the sand, or we kind of, in the name of being optimistic or thinking positively, we kind of put a rosy glow on things that are really not so rosy. So the rescuers have this incredible capacity for hope and for positive thinking, and yet they were able to just look at their society and just call a spade a spade. They could just, you know, just see it and accept it and not try to say, oh, it can't really be that bad. They can't really be sending them to concentration camps. They can't really be doing such terrible things. They were able to face reality. So that's the first thing.
They saw evil and knew it to be evil and acted accordingly, in other words.
Yeah, that's true.
Was there a particular religious undercurrent to any of this?
Sure. Some of them were very religious. I say were because 5 of the 10 people that I feature in The Heart Has Reasons have already passed away. So I was fortunate to catch them in those latter years of their lives. But, some of them, one of the most religious of them, Helchi Kurstra, felt that God was guiding her every step of the way and even felt that God put words in her mouth at certain critical moments when she could have easily been betrayed if she'd said the wrong thing. And then there were others who were not so intensely mystical religious, but they just believed it was their Christian duty to help. Then there were others who were not religious, and yet their own personal convictions just made them feel like they couldn't turn away, that they had to help in that situation.
And these were largely, I mean, unless my sense of it is completely wrong, Mark, these were largely younger folk in many instances at the time.
Yeah, they were, well, there were a lot of students, students who were concerned, and they formed 2 different student groups. Then there was a group that was formed by a minister, Calvinist minister, and there were a few older folks, too. There was one woman who was 97 when I interviewed her. I said, tell me about the war. And she thought a second. She said, which one do you want to know about?
She was there for both of them.
Yeah.
Oh, heavens. Well, did any of these folks give you an... Did it change their faith? Did it change their sense of, you know, their sense of, you know... How, I don't know how you can look at something like the Shoah, the Holocaust, and not say, you know, where was God?
Yeah. Well, I went into this with them, and this is a very moving kind of part of my conversations with them, and you'll certainly find it in the book. I see it as a moral crucible, they were cast into the fire, into this crucible of moral decision, where they couldn't escape. The situation was right there at their doorstep, and most people couldn't handle the heat, and they just played it safe and kept away from, you know, the real moral high ground. But these rescuers, they found it in themselves somehow to just reach out to the persecuted and put their own lives on the line. And you know what? 50, 60 years later, when I talked to them, some of them said that the war was the best time of their lives.
That's amazing. And some of these people had never discussed their activities before, had they?
That's true. Yeah, some of them, Kay Sveinstra, had never discussed his activities with anyone. And he was the one who said, you know, I wept during those years. It was terribly hard. And yet, you could do things. You could save people. You could be useful. You could be really of service. And for that reason, he always remembers those years as being the most meaningful, most exciting time of his life.
Did any of the people you interviewed were they able to extrapolate their experience then into the world where we live now?
Oh, sure. They've continued to be activists. Heti Valta started an ecological foundation. Meek Vermeer, whose husband had been tortured by the Nazis, got involved with Amnesty International, writing letters on behalf of people who had been unjustly imprisoned. And, you know, when these little governments in different countries get thousands of letters from all over the world, you know, about a particular prisoner, they often, it makes them accountable, and they often will release the prisoner if he was imprisoned for something such as his religious beliefs or so forth, or at least, you know, they'll give him a careful trial rather than just, you know, throwing him in jail and throwing away the key.
Now, you said you talked about your motivation for going into this research and into this history, Mark. What has it done for you as you go forward now?
Oh boy, well, it's changed my life. Like I said, I had been an LA musician, and then I bailed out of the music business, started going to college. I got this grant to interview the rescuers, and that I could hardly function when I came back from Holland because I was in culture shock, because I had been put into the culture of the rescuers and had just been overwhelmed by their generosity and kindness for the months that I was in Holland. And we became friends, and I kept in touch with the rescuers during the entire period of writing the book, which took me 10 years. And I showed them the chapters, the drafts of the chapters. I went over it with them. I talked with them, and I kept on finding out new things. And as they trusted me more and more, they kept on telling me more and more. So the final manuscript was really the culmination of that 10 years of contact that I've had with them.
Have you done anything with the Holocaust Museum in the United States in relation to the book?
I'm planning to donate the original interview tapes to the archives at the Holocaust Museum, and they've expressed interest in having me come and do a presentation, so I'm waiting to hear back from them.
Well, this is work that needs to be spread far and wide, because I agree with the sentiment of never again and never forget. But as we go forward into that, I think the perspective that these people bring to the discussion is something that Americans in particular need to have, Mark, and you can agree or disagree, of course, but there seems to be at the ground level with each of these folks a determination that somehow or another their silence or their unwillingness to act amounted to a level of complicity.
Yeah, you know, when you turn on the TV, there's, you know, all the televangelists and all kinds of people preaching and all kinds of personalities. But, you know, how many of those people really would have been willing to risk their lives and put their life on the line for others in this way? Not just for a moment, but for years, because the occupation lasted 5 years. Hetty Korstra kept 9 Jewish people in her house, along with her 3 daughters and her husband, for 3 years. So this was like day-to-day heroism, sustained, continuing. And I feel like these are the people we should be turning to for moral guidance. Like, these are the people who really lived the life. And they, as elders, have a tremendous amount to share with us. And they want to share. And that's where I feel like I was in the right place at the right time. And I caught them in these last years of their lives when they really wanted to tell me how it really was, and they wanted to share all the wisdom that they'd accumulated through their whole long lifetimes.
Well, they are truly amazing people, because, you know, you mentioned the 3-year time span, Mark. Heavenly days, every one of those 3 years, had they been caught, and many were, it was as hard on them as it was for the deportees, was it not?
Oh, it certainly was. And by the way, the Hetty Korstra, who I've been mentioning, all 9 of those people survived. So I think that's also important for people to read, you know, because reading the diary of Anne Frank, it's such a bummer that she was eventually picked up and caught and her whole family were taken away. Well, in this case, you've got 9 people hiding for 3 years, and they all made it through, and they remained lifelong friends.
And as we go forward, you know, I talk on this program every night almost, Mark, about the immorality of the Iraq War. And this the idea of the heroism of these people refusing to be complicit, refusing to be part of it, I think has a lesson for America today, because you know, we all pay taxes here.
Yeah.
And those taxes buy bombs. More of our tax dollars go to the defense budget than anything else.
Yep.
And
yep.
It's not defense, it's offense. You know, we live in a country where preemptive offensive war is now the order of the day. How do you extrapolate these people's stories into a way? I mean, can you see a way of action for Americans who refuse to be complicit in what we're doing now?
Well, first of all, I should mention that I've talked with the rescuers about the war in Iraq, and they're very upset about it. Some of them very upset. The most positive thing I heard from them was one guy said, well, if it had all gone the way George Bush had planned and, you know, there had been weapons of mass destruction and he was able to stop it all within a short time, that would have been fine. So that was the most positive comment. Most negative, I couldn't really say on the air. that's how well I've gotten to know the rescuers. They're pretty forthright with me. As far as extrapolating, well, yeah, I mean, we have to make our government accountable because these things are being done in our name. And we have to just get mad. You know, it's not enough to have business as usual, you know. We have to get out there and really make our representatives know how we feel. And we have to not be cowed by people who would just, you know, engage in character assassination and slander and so forth, which seems to be the order of the day. Just attack the personality rather than really deal with the issues.
And scream down any sort of legitimate debate. And, the other thing that I was thinking about in the context of what you have done here, Mark, part of the Republican plan for the so-called immigration debate, the House plan put forward a situation that would criminalize. I mean, it's sort of like what the rescuers faced, isn't it? This plan that would have said, you know, if a Catholic priest reaches out to an immigrant from Mexico, that priest would be guilty of a felony.
Yeah, see, that's where it starts getting really scary, like we're turning into a police state. And that's where we have to draw the line. Because it's a lot easier to draw the line early than it is once the whole military-industrial complex has just grabbed all the power and is doing things their way. You know, Bob, before you said, you know, you brought up the question, where was God during the Holocaust?
Mm-hmm.
Well, my answer is God was in the rescuers. There weren't many of them, but that was where God was able to express through those rescuers. And if we're on the side of justice now, I mean, if we're taking action, it's like I heard what Bono said at the National Prayer Breakfast. He said something really good that, he used to want God to bless his record or bless his career and all that, and then he figured out that if you go to what's already blessed, God's there. And he equates that with, you know, if you're helping the poor, if you're standing on the side of the oppressed, that's where God is. And that's where the rescuers were. And that's where we are now when we stand up for the most vulnerable in our society, you know, the elderly, the children, the poor people. And that's where we've got to be in order to be, you know, the instruments for those of us who are religious. You know, that's what we're being called to do right now as citizens.
Have you found the experience to be a reaffirmation of your faith?
Well, I didn't have that much faith.
Or an affirmation, I suppose.
I was brought up kind of wishy-washy Judaism. And, you know, like Judaism was eating bagels and going to the synagogue once in a while. But the rescuers showed me a different kind of Judaism because they had known these Jewish people whose, you know, their lives were in danger because they were Jewish. And, you know, they were on the verge of being wiped out. I mean, only about 10% of the Jews survived in Holland. Maybe 10 to 25. Historians argue about the exact figure. But I mean, It's like these countries where, you know, if you have the wrong type of book, if you have a banned book, you know, they'll arrest you and you might have to serve years in prison. I mean, the rescuers understood what Judaism really was, like the power of it. And they transmitted some of that to me, I must say, because they thought I was kind of helping to carry it on. Sometimes they looked at me as if I were like the child or the grandchild of the people they had rescued. And they, you know, it's like, oh, you're Jewish, you know.
And in some ways you are.
And in some ways I am. And I've gotten back into Judaism, actually not even back into it, but I've gotten into it in a way I've never been into it before. And it's very exciting for me because, you know, it's a great religion And the thing about Judaism is it puts justice right in the foreground. Justice is what matters, how people are treated.
Exactly. And, I once had a professor who said that the Greeks gave, the ancient Greek culture gave to the world poetry and sculpture, and the Romans gave us engineering and monumental buildings, and the paintings on the walls at Knossos and in Mesopotamia were manifestations of those cultures. He said, but the Jews manifested their art in their justice and in their law.
That's right. That's right. And it's been exciting to reconnect with Judaism. And also, I feel like the rescuers are such spiritual people that whether I was Hindu, Jewish, Buddhist, anything, just to be around them for that length of time, that charges you up spiritually. You just start to just feel tuned in to what life is really about. And I hope I've been able to convey some of that in The Heart Has Reasons, because that's what I'm hoping. I'm hoping that people will read it and they'll get, they'll get some of that spark that was transmitted to me when I spent time with the rescuers.
Well, I think you've done it. You've done a masterful job of it, Mark. You've got something you can be extremely proud of in this book. I assume it's available Amazon, Barnes and Noble, that entire those distribution networks.
Yeah, it should be all over. And I've got a website, www.hearthasreasons.com, which has all kinds of interesting information.
Well, wonderful. Mark Klempner, thank you very much for taking your time to join us. I love interviews like this because I say on an almost nightly basis, a lot of this is perspective.
Mm-hmm.
And the perspective that you bring out of those heroic tales, and by making them meaningful in this so-called modern world, is something that is not done nearly enough of. What are your future plans?
Well, I'm working on a new book, but I won't go into that now.
Okay.
But I'm going to be busy for a while, just talking to people all over the country about the rescuers. In fact, my tour schedule is on my website. And, I just think it's important that people know that at a crossroads where ethical action and rational self-interest lay in opposite directions, that not everyone chose to look out for themselves, that there were some people who just went in the direction of helping their neighbor. And, we need more of those kind of people now.
I couldn't agree more. Mark Klempner, thank you very kindly, sir.
Thank you, Bob.
And best of luck as you tour in support of the book, and best of luck as you go forward and have a wonderful life.
Thank you so much.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye now. You're going to be amazed with this book. I don't just bring books out into this program because I'm asked to. I turn a bunch of them down. But the ones that matter, I share with you. And this one matters. This one really matters. I've got this thing, this theory that I've developed about what happens when generations pass on and their lessons are forgotten. That's how evil can re-perpetuate itself and do the same evil thing yet again, with people looking at it thinking that it's somehow new or maybe not evil this time. Read this book. And go to the website, hearthasreasons.com. Please. Let's go to the phones. We've had some folks on hold for a while. Jim is with us. Hey, Jim, you're head on.
Good evening.
How are you?
Very well. I'm very impressed by the young man whose book you announced and the way he conducted himself, really.
Yes.
When you think of what life was like during the occupation of Europe during the era of Hitler's Third Reich, it was bad enough for the ordinary person. But for people to go through the extraordinary measure of taking people in. Now, Bob, you're talking about these Jews didn't have ration cards. They had no means of visible support. They had to live on the black market. Mm-hmm. And all of that was subject to intense scrutiny by not only by the Gestapo, but the local police. And sometimes the local police in these countries are worse than the Gestapo.
Absolutely.
And they were trying to be more royalist than the king, I guess, in that respect. And having been to the Holocaust Museum in D.C. and having spent the entire day there, if you should go there, you will never forget. And it is one of the most incredible experiences that you can undergo as far as museums in this country. The only other museum in Washington I would recommend would be Hillwood, and that's another museum of an entirely different type of thing. But I had a personal experience because I lived in Belgium for several years, and I was very familiar with a family there, the Reichelds, who lived in the city of Louvain, or Louvain. Now, the University of Louvain is the oldest Roman Catholic university in Europe, and my friend was a student there, and I stayed with the family, and the boy's mother, my friend's name was Mark Reichel, and his mother was a nurse in Brussels during World War II, and was a member of the resistance. And I remember her as being such a very dignified, proud lady, but she was caught by the Gestapo carrying a gun in her purse, which was a capital offense, and was imprisoned in the Gestapo jail in Brussels. And the very night before her execution, the Germans had to leave. And instead of the firing squad coming for her, it was the liberation.
Well, there are those out there, Jim, and I go back and forth, but for the most part, I disagree. There are those out there who say that you can never make a comparison to the Nazis.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, you made a statement about borders and things. Now, borders are important because, I mean, borders are very important to people who lived in Poland when the Germans crossed them in September 1st, 1939. They were certainly very important to the people in the Benelux countries when they were invaded in May of 1940.
But they didn't stop
anything.
And also
to the Russians in June 22nd, 1941, when they crossed with Operation Barbarossa.
Oh, and that's the thing. The Soviet border was just it was a great big, beautiful, flat battleground for tanks to maneuver on.
But what I mean is, when the borders were violated, it certainly made a lot of difference to a lot of people in their lives and the way their lives were lived for the next 4 or 5 years. And I just, you know,
Oh, certainly. And there's a great deal of difference between mechanized divisions crossing over borders and starving people wading a river in order to stop starving.
You know, this is an interesting thing about this immigration thing, and you're transitioning into that, and that's fine. And as I said before, I'm not that well versed on this issue, but I did look up some things today. And it was interesting to note that if the employers of these people who pick lettuce and who are so, you know, vital to our agribusiness system, if they were to increase the benefits and wages of their employees 40%, that the only impact it would be to the American table per year, per family, would be $10.
That's amazing. But, you know, but
now,
it's...
This is hot off the wire.
Where did you find that, Jim?
CNN.
I'll be darned.
But, I mean, I don't understand why in the world these employers cannot be taken to task, and I know I'm repeating myself from last night. I mean, as far as I'm concerned, they're the ones who really need to be taken to task for indulging in what I consider to be a form of fraud. And they are defrauding the Fair Labor Standards Act, as far as I'm concerned. Not legally, but, I mean, in my own mind, they are.
Well, you're absolutely right. And it should be legally.
I mean, this is a fraud of not only basic economics, but it's a fraud of basic humanity.
Yeah. Sure it is. And that's the thing. It's like what I was talking about with the contractors. The price of the labor is not going to necessarily change the cost to the end user nearly as much as it's going to impact the difference between whether the boss man drives a Corvette or a Ferrari.
But, you know, like I say, the main argument these people will have, well, if we give these people decent wages, then it's going to really hit us at the grocery store. But that's not the case, because the American family only spends, on the average, $387 a year on fruits and vegetables.
Boy, doesn't that all by its lonesome self, Jim? Doesn't that just say a boatload about us?
Well, yeah, but I mean, and also, and it says basically that even the farmer, I'm not sure what the statistics are, but the trickle down to the worker is less than 20% of what money is involved. So, I mean, you know, it would not hurt the agribusiness community of this country that hog as much as they would claim if they were to, say, to increase 40%. And then I guess if they increased it to 80%, the cost of the average table would be $10.
That's simply amazing, Jim.
And, you know, that's exactly what came over the wire tonight, and I wanted to interject that. And the only other thing I wanted to say is this, and I'm going to say this to my dear friend Wayne, who said the pendulum was stuck. I think the pendulum has begun to move, and it never really stopped, because I think we're seeing changes happen right now. I mean, this morning when I heard at 5 o'clock how the director or the deputy press secretary of Homeland Security was arrested for his frivolous activities on the Internet, and I'm not going to go into that because I'm sure everybody's familiar with it by now.
Sure.
I mean, I really feel protected when I have people of that caliber who want to engage in licentious talk with an alleged 14-year-old child. I mean, I really feel protected when people like that are in positions of authority and responsibility.
Yeah, don't you, though?
And, you know, and this guy was even using his own government cell phone. And, you know, I don't know where in the world people's minds are, particularly when they're in the civil service. And having been in the civil service myself in the background and military, I mean, there's certain things you just don't do.
Yeah.
I mean, if you have any sense.
But we have a governmental culture, and we're running out of time here, Jim. But we have the governmental culture now that seems...
Well, they seem to think that this is their own private fiefdom, and they can use it
right
where they want to.
Right. I mean, when Democrats talk about a culture of corruption in government, they're not kidding.
And, you know, this leads to believe, I know we're running out of time here. I mean, this thing with Representative McKinney.
Yeah.
Now, I don't know what's going to come out on that. But, I mean, I've had to deal with Capitol Police because I've had to go to Capitol Hill, and they're very decent people. And, you know, she's a seven-term congresswoman, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, maybe, and I just kind of got from her attitude on TV that she just thinks that she owns that place up there. And she just happened to zig at the...
She's got an in-your-face style
that has served her very well. You don't pull that with Capitol Police officers.
I understand that.
I don't give a damn who you are.
What I want is I want the video. There's got to be videotape of it.
You know, that's the reason they're going to go to the grand jury with this thing, because obviously there must be something there, because they would not be pursuing these links to go to a grand jury and go through all the legal mechanics.
Well, the worst part of this, Jim, is that we've got the Republican Party on the run. And, you know, suddenly, you know, the Republicans are trying to turn this, say that this is somehow on a par with the abject, shameless corruption of the likes of Conrad Burns and Tom DeLay. And
if he's innocent, that's fine. It will backfire in their face, and she'll be exonerated, as she says she would. But, I mean, what I'm trying to say is this, and I just use that as an example, and I was going to mention Tom DeLay next. I mean, these people, once they get to D.C., they seem to lose the sense of the fact that they are there to keep the public trust and to serve the benefit of the public good. Instead, they seem to regard it as their own fiefdom and, you know, whatever they can get out of it, and they seem to think they're above the law.
I think you're right.
And I think this can be found on both sides of the aisle.
Some of it can, undoubtedly. Jim, we're out of time. Thank you very kindly for all your thoughts.
Appreciate your opportunity. The opportunity, okay?
All right. Have a good evening.
You too, my friend.
Bye now. Okay, let's take a quick break. And when we come back after the news, more of your phone calls at 877-443-2366. It's your nightly confrontation with facts. And on top of it, it's prayer meeting night. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Head on Radio News, I'm John Fox. The Bush administration official charged with preying on a child for sex has waived extradition. Brian Doyle agreed to be transferred from Maryland to Florida. He was arrested Monday as part of a sting operation. Doyle, a press officer for the Department of Homeland Security, solicited sex from someone online he thought was a 14-year-old girl. He faces 7 counts of seducing a child, plus charges of sending improper materials to a minor. The Capitol Hill police are ratcheting up the war of words in the Cynthia McKinney matter. A Capitol Police spokesman accused Congresswoman McKinney of acting like, quote, the high and haughty, unquote. Capitol Police Chief Terrence Gaynor said McKinney should have stopped when his officer grabbed her from behind. McKinney still believes the matter is more about racial profiling than anything else. She called the incident, quote, much ado about a hairdo, unquote. It's a little like closing the barn door after the horses are gone, but 4 Republicans are joining 79 Democrats in the House of Representatives to demand a debate about the Iraq War. The House members are demanding that the debate be sent to the House floor over the objection of the Republican leadership. The group needs a total of 218 signatures in order to have the debate. Workers in Indonesia protested Tuesday. The working people showed their displeasure at their government's attempts to make it harder for them to exist. A new labor bill in Indonesia tries to take away those citizens' rights to go on strike. It also seeks to cut wages and benefits. Labor unions in the country say the bill allows too much outsourcing and lets employers circumvent unions. The Pentagon is complaining about a video making the rounds on the internet in the Middle East that shows people pulling a part of a body out of a crashed American helicopter. The Defense Department said Tuesday that it is outraged that, quote, the terrorists continue to demonstrate their immoral disregard for human dignity and life, unquote. George Bush's war on the people of Iraq has thus far claimed the lives of as many as 100,000 civilians. Amnesty International provided more evidence Tuesday that the CIA is using secret flights to kidnap and torture people in the so-called war on terror. The report, Below the Radar, Secret Flights to Torture and Disappearance, documents case after case of CIA-sponsored misconduct involving a host of other countries, including the UK and other European nations' airspace. Amnesty's report gives evidence of more than 1,000 of the secret flights. Today in New Orleans, Mayor Ray Nagin suspended installation of FEMA trailers. Apparently, residents who would be neighbors of the Katrina survivors objected to locating the trailers so close to affluent neighborhoods. One resident, Edward Markle, said, quote, I won't be able to take a bath without them seeing me, unquote. This is news on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing, stealing, stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung happy birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy birthday is copyrighted. So if you're singing in a public place, you'd better be paying royalties or you'll be stealing music. Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of 5 corporations? Then stop giving them your money and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Determined not to leave quietly, disgraced and resigning Congressman Tom DeLay said he would file ethics charges against Cynthia McKinney if no other congressman does for the incident she had with Capitol Police. DeLay was apparently incensed that no ethics complaint had been filed, saying, quote, had it been Tom DeLay, the ethics committee would have met the next day, unquote. A report released today by Amnesty International documents the use of front companies and private aircraft for the action of rendition, which is essentially government-sanctioned kidnapping and transport to secret prisons. The report detailed the plight of 3 Yemeni nationals who were sent to a number of secret prisons over the course of 18 months. They reported as saying all the guards at each location were Americans. Apple Computer unveiled software today that would enable its Mac operating system to run, yes, that's right, Windows XP. The computer program called Boot Camp would require the user to reboot the system to switch between Mac and Windows operating systems. The computer company hopes that this will help make it more than its usual 3 or 4% market share. Your tax dollars at work. In 2005, members of Congress squandered more of your money. Citizens Against Government Waste released its 2006 Congressional Pig Book Tuesday. The report details a host of pet projects congressmen use to appease their constituents. Some of the highlights? Several million dollars went to help finance the World Toilet Summit. $500,000 went for a teapot museum in Sparta, North Carolina. In all, the report documents over $13 billion worth of wasted money. And that's the news. On the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm John Fox.
It's your second hour in the Liberal Sandbox, and you're Head-On with Bob Kincaid.
Hour number two of this, the Wednesday night prayer meet edition of Head On. Everything works. None of the embarrassing little screw-ups of the first hour. I really did enjoy our conversation with Mark Klempner. I hope you did as well. And, you know, if you like, you're going to like the book if you like history. If you like real history, not perspective history. This is more like oral history. This is sort of straight from the mouth, if you know what I mean. Let's go back to the phones. Rick has been waiting. Hey, Rick, you're Head On. Oh, Rick.
Hello.
Hello. Hello.
Is that you, Bob?
That's me, Bob.
Are we on the air?
You are.
Man, I accidentally hung up. I was trying to put you on hold for a second because somebody had asked me a question. And so, okay, hi, all.
Howdy.
How are you doing?
Doing good.
So that last caller, that last guest, that was magnificent.
Yeah, Mark Klempner?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I think that having guests like that, you should keep showing and having more of them appear over and over again, because you know what my position is from last night. I think we're headed in that way. The only difference is it won't be Jews, it'll be Mexicans.
Well, the very interesting thing out of tonight's conversation was that I gathered a sense that maybe Mark feels that way too.
Yeah. Well, I mean, you can't, unless you're a hard-line right-wing nutcase Jew in Israel. Everybody else is going to see it. I mean, the people, the Hasidics or whatever they were that rallied and protested in Brooklyn last night, they won't take that kind of stuff. I mean, those people will not take. They literally go, I'll never forget. I'll never forget.
Yeah, but the important thing, Rick, is that as Mark put it, agreeing with me, never again means never again to anyone.
That's right. That's what it used to mean. That's what it used to mean until the right wing took over Israel, and then started becoming like Nazis to the Palestinians.
In large part, Rick, that is the Israeli government and is not representative of a great number of Israelis themselves.
Tell me about it. I've got a friend that survived the Holocaust. I mean, her name is Helena, and she was a little kid in the camps. And we've been talking and emailing each other now for over 10 years. I know the score, but it's just that these governments, they get, whether it's ours or theirs, or whether it's Pakistani, or whether it's India, or whomever, these people get into power, and they forget the history of how they ended up being on the downside, they're on the upside, and so they start practicing Nazi behavior.
And ends-based philosophy, you know, where the ends justify the means. But there's another factor or another component to this, Rick. I noticed this in one of the news stories today, and I've mentioned it in conversations with our good friend John Fox down in Australia, because he's been able to verify some of it down there. The United States is certainly nobody's moral compass, especially right now. But what the United States does and succeeds at or gets away with finds its way quickly into other cultures. What we call conservatism, I think down under is referred to as, and John can correct me on the in the chat room if I'm wrong. Their problem down there is the so-called liberals. But they all have the same earmarks. And I ran into a news story today. There were some riots in Jakarta, Indonesia today, because lo and behold, what's the government doing? The government is trying to rewrite their labor laws to allow what amounts to union busting.
Yeah.
And guess why they're doing it? They're doing it because they've seen it successfully done here.
Yeah.
We sneeze and the world gets a cold.
Okay. Taking a breath. My turn. Here's what it is. Leadership is about top down. And at one time in my life, I had three stores and I had 322 employees. And whatever I did, they would emulate, especially the managers, okay?
Mm-hmm.
And if I shortchanged somebody, they'd shortchange somebody. But if I stuck to the company policy of doing what was right and or my own policy and making sure that the customer got a fair shake, they would too. But if I started slacking because I needed to make a Porsche payment or something like that, then they would turn around and start slacking too. It was so obvious, and it would trickle all the way down to the point that you got down to a secretary that would be rude on the telephone because she was above the law. And that's what we have in this world today. Bush is, for like it or not, he's the grand manager, and he leads, and everybody else follows his lead all the way down the line, and it does trickle down to the other countries. If it's good enough for George Bush, it's good enough for me. And that's how we've ended up in a world now that is just a sewer. Is because everybody's emulating the top. Bad management makes for bad companies. Bad presidents make for bad nations. And ultimately, apparently, it makes for a bad world community. That everybody starts going, I got mine, I don't care if you got yours. And no matter what that level is, just think about it. All the way down, if you go all the way down to Chad, where the guy that does not have flies on his baby simply because he's got a piece of tin over him. See what I mean?
Yeah, I do see what you mean. I think we're describing the same thing from different angles.
Yeah. Anyway, so there's no disagreement. There's no disagreement whatsoever. But it's just that the world has to understand. And I don't know how we're going to get them to understand this because, I mean, there's a lot of people that don't have a lot of education. All they know is, hey, I see what the big shots are doing. I'm going to do it, too. That's how you end up with all these kind of warlords and all that. And I don't know how we're going to fix this to say that, be able to say, as a nation, sometime in the very near future, Bush was wrong, and we're here to make it all better. Well, a lot of people have lost their babies and their wives or their husbands or their brothers or sisters, et cetera. And I don't think that's going to be enough appeasement to get them to go along with us. I think what George Bush has done is sown the seeds for civil war, absolute civil war. And I just don't see how we're going to get out of it. I really don't. I mean, if you want to take China into consideration, no one's ever going to fight a conventional war with them. It's impossible. You will lose.
It would be insane.
Yeah. You got to do it nuclear. You have to do it nuclear. Then the Russians got to side with them.
I got to tell you, I hate that kind of thinking.
Yeah, but it's true. The Russians got to side with the Chinese because the Chinese and the Russians have been working this Iraq deal. So and they'll send up their junky missiles, plus their really, really new good ones that they got about 5 years ago. Okay? That they got hooked up on the borders, these limited yield of, you can go 90 to 150 miles into Europe. And the French, what are they going to do? They're not going to do anything. Israel will launch on everybody. I mean, and so if Iran has one bomb, or if North Korea has seven, what the hell difference does it make? We're not even talking about
Well, the fact of the matter is North Korea does have them, and you can – and see, that's the thing. That's the sense of urgency that's created within the Bush administration. North Korea does have them, and –
it doesn't matter. They're not contenders. They're not contenders.
Wait, though, Rick.
War
Rick.
With the Chinese and the Soviets.
Yeah, but the thing is, you can't bully them once they have them. You'll notice that the bullying of North Korea is not going on. Some of it has to do with them not having anything, but the other part of it has to do with the fact that they're cowards.
I recommend that every other country in the world that doesn't have a nuke, get one. It's your only safe bet against George Bush and his neocon friends. I mean, let's face it. The only countries that get attacked are people who only got guns. That's what George Bush has taught the world. What, is it any wonder that Iran is taking a leak in our face? Or that North Korea is taking a leak in our face? He's proven it. Afghanistan, Iraq, someplace in Africa.
Yeah, I mean, that's why Iran is talking about having test-fired this missile and that missile.
That's
sure.
Right.
Hey, Rick, we got to roll on. We've got to hit the break, brother.
Huh?
We got to hit the break, man.
Okay, man. I'm all for it.
Later.
See ya.
Bye. Okay, a quick break, and then we come back to more of your phone calls. 877, the number 4, head on, 877-443-2366. I'm Bob Kincaid.
This is Bruce Birch, and if you missed my show Sunday night, here's what I got up to. A group of U.S. businessmen in the UAE said they will invite the Oprah Winfrey Show and other talk shows to the Gulf to change American public opinion, which has helped block Dubai's takeover of 6 U.S. ports. He's saying that they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States and explain why the UAE is important. If you want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, they need to send... something, not Oprah. I mean, how many average guys do you know watch Oprah? I don't. If they want to reach out to the average guy in the United States, as much as I hate to say it, they need to send Jerry Springer and the Jerry Springer Show over there with the bald guy. You know, maybe they can do a UAE version of My Grandmother Is Also My Lover or something like that. Oh, that's just a...
Join me, Bruce Birch, for All Things Reconsidered every Sunday evening, 7 p.m. Pacific, 10 p.m. Eastern, allthingsreconsidered.org.
Lottie in the chat room has fixed himself some stuffed pork chops with apple raisin walnut chutney.
You, me, Grace, Rama.
Mango chutney.
Hey, speaking of that,
it's all you need.
Mustard seed?
Mustard seed, yeah. That article.
It's not
there.
The same as mustard gas.
Well, it's pretty close. Mustard gas.
Join
mustard
Grace
gas.
And Rama, homebodies, Sunday evenings, 8 to 10 p.m. Eastern, right here on the Head On Radio Network. It's food for thought.
Broadcasting live from a remote, undisclosed location in the wilds of wonderful West Virginia. Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Eighteen and a half minutes past the hour. The conversation, as usual, far-reaching and wide in scope. Let's go to Knoxville, Tennessee, and our buddy Luke. Hey, Luke, you're head on.
Hey, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I wanted to go in and do something after watching the Matthews show tonight, but you know how that is.
Sure.
I was telling Amos, it's going to get like Fox. You almost feel like you have to go in and have your skin cleaned. It's like, you know.
Yeah, it's the ancient Greeks used to rub themselves down with olive oil, and then they had this curvy thing, and they'd scrape it back off. I want one of those scrapey things.
No, I tell you, the thing about him this week has been all of a sudden it's like, oh, I was on their side all the time, or on the Democrat side all the time. But first of the week, you know, he was like, you know, who would ever thought that, you know, that this president could talk us into a war? It's like, huh? You have pom-poms, Mr. Matthews. You were the head cheerleader.
Oh, yes, he was. And, you know, we've got the quotes to prove it, too. And then we've also got the audio this evening, Luke. Have you heard this stuff, the off-air stuff with Tom DeLay?
Oh, no. That sounds like fun.
Oh, while I've got you on the line, let's listen to it together. I think we'll enjoy it more that way. Agnes, if you'll do me the honors, please. If you will go there to the file and play us Chris Matthews' little exchange with DeLay. Here we go. Dig this, Luke.
In this new focus group stuff on the candidates?
No, I haven't.
Great stuff.
Really?
I'll send it to you. It's great. Yeah, it's great stuff.
Really?
This is prior to an interview.
John Kerry, all these guys, all Democrats. And how they do. And the Frank Luntz did it. And
who I like.
Hillary did not do well.
Really?
Kerry did well.
You're kidding.
I am not kidding. They didn't like Edwards. They thought he was a rich lawyer pretending to care about poor people.
Yeah.
Hillary was know-it-all. I don't know what.
Nothing worse than a woman knowing.
Thanks. I owe you one. I owe you two.
No, you don't.
Today and last night. No,
yeah.
I do.
I appreciate.
How you like that, Luke?
I'd seen that quote about the thing about the know-it-all woman, and I didn't read the story at the time. I didn't have the time.
Yeah, this was all, you know, obviously they're getting ready to go on air, and he's sitting there making happy chat with an accused felon, Tom DeLay.
Oh, I tell you one thing that he was mentioning in that.
Mm-hmm.
I tell you one thing the Democratic Party better be careful of is this cuddling up to Frank Luntz.
Yeah.
Can
no
we
kidding.
Say the words toe sucker? Remember what that happened to us.
Oh, Lord, yes. He's.
Well, I hear him saying, you know, that we're to start taking advice from Frank Luntz. It's like, before we go out and walk on the high wire, let's grease it just for the fun of it. You
well,
know?
Yeah, I mean, why don't we just go ahead and ask Tom, you know, that's an endorsement enough. Did you hear that? Did you hear that part, Luke? Oh, I like Frank Luntz.
Uh-huh. That's the, it's like, guys, anything you take from him, you take with a couple hundred pounds of salt, not a pinch.
Right.
It's like, but the thing about Matthews, I was hearing this, and I was sitting there going, somebody play the Donahue tapes. Come on, play the Donahue tapes. I ran across one not too long ago. I was looking through some old videotapes, and I ran across one of them, and it's like, God, I wish somewhere somebody had all those.
Oh, I know.
Remind people, you know, everyone saw pop them in and go, remember, this is what, you know, every time I hear him say, well, hear Matthews say, well, no one was saying that, you know, that it would be, there'd be a problem. It's like, hello, people were screaming about it, Matthews. Of course, you had cotton in your ears.
Well, I don't think he did, Luke. I mean, he's just a partisan.
I know, but you know what I mean?
I do.
They were talking, he was like, what was that thing with Janet Parshall? You know,
yeah,
sticking his fingers in his ears.
La, 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 la. Yeah, I can't hear you.
But I tell you the story that bugs me the most is the fact that it has not been getting any play. Is this thing about Ken Blackwell?
Oh, and his Diebold stock? Yeah.
It's like, Lord almighty, I mean, there should be people, you know, just absolutely throwing a fit. I mean, the Federal Election Commission should be down there going, hello.
Oh, yeah, sure they should. And, you know, the whole excuse that he put forward, I was just opening, I looked in my stock portfolio one day, and lo and behold, there was 10,000 shares of Diebold. Bless my soul, I had no idea I had that. Whew.
It's like, I'm sorry, wait a minute. Now, my financial manager knows I am the fellow in charge of elections, and he buys me Diebold stock?
I know. Well, you know, and the whole CoinGate thing still hasn't gone away either. You remember that?
Well, the thing about that's the one that bugs me is the fact that virtually almost every Republican in Ohio is caught up in that, and you can't get the national press to even mention it.
Well, and they gave this guy that was part of the great big ugly little fraud. This guy got an advisory post.
I know.
That's the headline. Advisory post gave no voice in U.S. Mint policy from the Toledo Blade. My God, you know, this guy ripped off the Ohio workers' compensation system to the tune of millions because the Republicans wanted to invest in rare coins. You know, I got a stamp collection they might be interested in.
I've got some silver certificates somewhere, you know. but the other one that got to me was this thing with McCain in front of the labor union. It's like, isn't there some tape of this? I mean, God, this ought to be running, you know. with the man sitting there getting booed.
Yeah.
I mean, this thing ought to be playing on the hour.
Well, you know, if it had been Howard Dean, it would be.
I know. It's like, say, that.
You know, liberal media, my left hind foot.
You know, how does that, they sold their soul to the Straight Talk Express. I heard some new nickname for somebody said, what was it? It run off the tracks or something. You know,
well, yeah, John Stewart had McCain on last night.
I saw part of that.
And he, before bringing him on, he asked the rhetorical question, has the Straight Talk Express gone through BS town?
Yeah. It was like, yes. He's one of the people who could take him on. But it's just one of those things. Sometimes you see this stuff and it's like, you're just going, you know, and the thing of it is, in six months, they'll all swear, oh no, we didn't know anything about this. You know what I mean? It's sort of like,
yeah, we get this. Yeah. You mean where the part where we get the Sergeant Schultz thing and I knew nothing. Oh, and the thing is this, this business with McCain addressing the graduating acolytes at Jerry Falwell University. I'm sitting here looking at a news release, a press release that just banged into my inbox, Luke, and it says, headline, Senator John McCain's Liberty University address to be televised nationally via Sky Angel Family and Christian Television Service.
Oh, I mean, you know, it's like, guys, we aren't even in the fantasy land now. We're out into the brown acid land.
We really are, Luke, because one of the things that John Stewart just pointed out in passing last night was the fact that McCain has hired two of Bush's central campaign consultants. So you know why this is showing up on Sky Angel Network, right?
Yeah. And the thing gets me is I'm hearing all these pundits keep saying, well, he can always get back the centrist and the Democrats, and I'm like, no, I don't really think so this time. It's sort of like, you know, he really has sold the soul. I mean, you know, it's like all of a sudden turn around and say, oh, I'm a maverick. It's like, no, this isn't going to happen this time.
Now, every time I see John McCain, my mind flashes to Angela Lansbury with that playing card suit on in the Manchurian Candidate. He's, you know, there's nothing to McCain. He's nuts.
Well, the thing of it was, is like I said once before, I think, it's like that. I could understand it if it was him, and that's fine. You know what I mean? That's a man make his own decision. But Bush went after his family.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, I'm sorry, but you know what I mean? It's like, if you're at that point where you're essentially,
well, Andrew,
kissing up to them, it's like you have no spine.
Well, one of the favorite sons of your native state there, Luke, is the proper response for what you do when they slime your family. Andrew Jackson said, "I can forgive them for what they said to me because politics is a nasty business, but what they did to Rachel can never be forgiven."
As I say, it's one of those things, like, say, you know, he's a politician, and that's part of the life, you know what I mean? But when they start going after your family, I mean, we're talking mob tactics now.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, if you want to go after a politician, well, I mean, you know, that's fair game. You know, politicians, hey. But when you start going after the wife and the children, I mean, that's the time where I'm sorry, I don't like violence, but that's time to pick up the baseball bat and let's start playing kneecaps.
Exactly. You know, play Mingo the Indian and wait in the weeds and cut them off at the knees and then kick their ass for being short.
Oh, your guest earlier, Mr. Walker?
Lempner,
I'm sorry, I apologize.
Yes.
It reminded me, years ago, I got to hear Harlan Ellison talk one time.
Mm-hmm.
And if you ever hear Harlan Ellison, Harlan's an idiot, but that's beside the point. but he was in front of a group of people, and he asked him, you know, said, how many of you have heard the name Treblinka? Or how many of you heard the name Dachau? And like I say, about a quarter of the people stuck their hands up, and he went through the list, you know, all these things, and he said, you know, when those people say that things like, you know, if you don't remember history, you're doomed to repeat it, he said, that's why. He said, because only a quarter of you don't remember this. And if you don't keep it, you know, if you don't remember it, how are you going to see it the next time it's coming?
Exactly. You know, we are trained to be forgetful. Luke, we got to hit our break.
Right.
Always good talking to you.
All right. See you, Bob.
Have a good evening.
Right.
Bye now. And a quick break, then we come back. More of your phone calls, 877-443-2366. This is Head On. I'm Bob.
Head On with Bob Kincaid.
Okay, listen up. If you're sick of hearing lies by right-wing corporate pukes who like to pretend they stand up for the working guy, then head over to the Cup of Joe radio show where the truth will hit you so hard you'll have to wear your hard hat. You can listen to the screaming audio at cupojoe.blogspot.com. That's cupojoe.blogspot.com. Now get back to work. It's the Cup of Joe Report. I'm Joe Vecchio. It would be nice to celebrate the fact that Tom DeLay has been forced to resign, but somehow it all seems rather hollow. Yes, the right wing has lost a major player, but the machine grinds on. DeLay hasn't been convicted of any crimes, at least not yet, and all indications are that he's going to remake himself into a preacher and move to another division of the right wing money-making cartel. So unless he gets serious jail time, he'll never have to worry about putting food on his family. I've said this before, but it bears repeating. DeLay has been compared by some to Boss Tweed, who was the corrupt leader of Tammany Hall, the political machine that ran New York City for over a century. Tweed eventually wound up in prison, where he died, and Tammany remains the poster child for corrupt political organizations in this country. But comparisons to Tweed and Tammany Hall are unfair to Tweed and Tammany, because even when people knew how corrupt Tammany was, they still supported them because Tammany did things to help people out. In contrast, the policies of Mr. DeLay and the Republican leadership do nothing but hurt their most loyal constituents. They set themselves up like a protection racket, scaring people with phony enemies and pretending that only the Republicans can save them. They do their job so well that sometimes people vote for legislation that makes their lives far worse. I hope someday that working-class Republicans wake up and realize they're being scammed, but I'll be brutally honest, I'm not holding my breath. Now get back to work. This has been the Cup of Joe Report by Joe Vecchio. Listen to the Cup of Joe radio show every Saturday evening from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
A man who has the heart of a conservative, pickled in a jar on his desk. It's Bob Kincaid.
Welcome back. 26 minutes and change before the hour. Halfway through for this Wednesday night prayer meeting edition. And straight back to the phones, because conversation radio is what it's all about. David joins us from Nashville. Hey, David, you're Head On.
Good evening, Bob.
How are you?
Well, I'm quite well. It's sunny here, and I'm loving that. And just a, you know, it's an all-around good day. But I got a couple of obscure things I want to bring up. But first, I've got a coattail. My brother in Eastern Tennessee.
Please do.
Until about 12 months ago, to some degree, I respected McCain. But once he did what he did, after Bush did what he did, there is absolutely no respect due John McCain whatsoever. Whatever he did for us in uniform has been so seriously tainted and eroded and ruined. There is no reason to consider John McCain anything but a man who wants to be elected more than he wants to be a leader. And we found out one thing beyond any question. He swallows.
Oh, yeah.
And I'll leave it at that.
A bunch.
Yeah, so it's not brown acid. It's a different liquid. Anyway.
Yeah.
So a couple of things, and I heard, when I dialed in tonight, I heard the wonderful caller from Florida speak about Palestine, and I hope this little obscure, potentially obscure now, But I want to make a bet for the entire audience. There are two things that are going to have great effect, and we'll hear about them, and we'll hear about them in great measure. It's kind of a unintended consequence thing. The fact that the Israelis are doing everything they can to choke the duly elected Hamas regime to death, was that part of the Palestine call that I just got the last few words of?
Kinda, maybe. But
well, what they're doing is by saying that Hamas, and it's in their charters, they've said it, they've lived it, that they want to destroy Israel. The Israeli government is saying that there is no hope that they could ever negotiate or ever cause these people to be a political entity as opposed to a terror entity. And right, that's years down the road or months, maybe only months, but they are withholding taxes, customs money that they have always acted as a functionary for in regard to this Palestinian, the area. And as such, no one in the old PLO is getting paid. So over and over, 100,000+ families are being denied income because of this Israeli effort. And we are tied to that, the Israeli nation is tied to that, and if, after going through an election and saying they want to be political, if those people aren't given the money that they are legally due, but that Israel says, no, we shouldn't give it to you because we don't like your charter, we don't like what you were in the years past, we will pay a price for that because all of those people in Palestine that chose to vote rather than bomb, vote rather than give money in such a way as to create terrorism, there is going to be an uprising followed by conflict that will only draw us into an area that will be another open sore. And if this escalates the way it can, it will happen quickly, and once it's started, we'll never stop it.
Well, no, of course not. The thing with, I mean, and you know, it's other nations too. France, for God's sakes, France came out and said, "Nah, we're not going to deal with Hamas until Hamas proves that it's no longer a terrorist organization." But there's a mindset here, David, that says that fails to recognize that these organizations that we have been trained by the Israelis to say are terrorists, to the people that they bring food, they're not terrorists. They're saviors.
They're heroes. They are freedom fighters.
Yeah,
there are those that will argue, and I don't know which side of the argument is correct, if either is completely correct. I doubt either is completely correct. But there are those that will say what has happened in the Middle East has forced Hamas to act the way they do. Now, part of that certainly is an intensely corrupt individual that ran the PLO, and Yasser Arafat was a terrible, terrible leader. There are hundreds of millions of dollars in bank accounts and fat cats sitting on those accounts that should have never been there. It should have been to the benefit of the Palestinian people. But that's thing one. And if somebody doesn't step in to engage Hamas, how are they going to prove they're not the old Hamas if you're not working with them?
Well, right. You're damned if you do and damned if you don't.
Stolen. Exactly.
And
the other thing.
Well, it's David, it's the whole thing about, you know, we're all for self-determination as long as you're self-determining yourselves the way we want you to, which is sort of a goofy way of defining self-determination in my book.
As long as you self-determine yourself to be our slave.
Right. Well, you know, look at it's the Ibrahim al-Jafari thing in Iraq. We've decided that Ibrahim al-Jafari cannot be prime minister of Iraq, and Ibrahim al-Jafari has said, I will not be shoved out of office by the Americans and the British.
And that figures heavily in my second point. Right now, of all things, the Shiites are split. And they are not growing together. They are not a single voice. They are separating, and they're showing every signs of splitting right down the middle. All right, the greatest thing that the Sunnis could wish for is for the Shiites to split. It would be their invitation to say, well, great, will attack one or the other or both. It is the underpinning of a civil war. And if the Shiites split, as it looks that they are going to split, and have an argument within the family, there's no one to speak for them to try to negotiate between a Shiite leader, a Sunni leader, and a Kurdish leader.
And there is the group that is sitting back and waiting for everything to go to hell. The Kurds, because most people know, a lot of people know, you know, the Kurds are the single largest ethnic minority on earth that do not have their own country.
But in that part of the world, they have a geographic territory that they have successfully defended, even in some ways, against the likes of Saddam Hussein when he had all the power in the world. They have the least ethnically diverse geography in their part of Iraq. They are the best armed, and they show every sign of being able to act in accord with each other. So, yes, they're going to stand on the sidelines and say, well, you're not going to come up here because you know what would happen should you try it. And they're going to let those other guys go at each other. And
well, not only that, I remember a story from a couple of months back where a member of the present Iraqi military, you know, the one that's going to stand up and we're going to sit down or we're going to play musical chairs or whatever it is the little flunkies in the Joint Chiefs of Staff say now. I remember when there was a, of course, it didn't get much press. It got hardly any press. But he came, you know, he was a Kurd in the Iraqi military, and he said, look, here's how it goes. We're sitting here, we're training, we're getting the goodies, we're learning how to use the stuff, and as quick as it becomes feasible, we're going to bust it up and take it for ourselves. We may be members of the Iraqi military, but we are Kurds first.
And even before that, it's a surname in their language. They are clannish, but they will. Right after clan comes Kurdish ethnic heritage.
Yeah, there are more ways for George Bush to there are more ways to evaluate how much George Bush has screwed up this region than we have time in a week worth of programming, David. Because, of course, one of the reasons, you remember when the Turks wouldn't let us go through Turkey into northern Iraq as part of our little invasion? Remember that?
Oh, absolutely.
There was a reason.
It was Kurd.
Yeah, because the Turks are scared to death of the Kurds because the Kurds figure, well, they think, I mean, you know, they think, and rightly so, that the Kurds have designs on a portion of Turkey.
And the Turks have treated the Kurds as badly as any dominant people have ever treated any other lesser people.
Well, yeah, I mean, you know, when Mark Klempner was talking about Never Again, there's a well-known Turkish journalist who was recently tried, I believe, for sedition or saying nasty things about the government or whatever the statute's called, because he acknowledged the fact that the Turks killed... Oh, now, see, there's a trick. Talk about Turks and Kurds for very long, and pretty soon you're going to say something ugly.
That's not going there. Wait a second.
Right. But no, he acknowledged that the Turks had killed 1 million Armenians. And they had. It's just truth.
Of course they did.
And so, you know, there's plenty of hatred out there. And the nice little thing is that George Bush seems to have managed to find them all and just, he's got his big old box of salt out and just rubbing for all he's worth. Hey, has it hurt more yet? And just brought it all to the surface.
He's reminded them, he's given them every opportunity to remember, and he's making very sure that now they have a chance to act out what they feel about it. And it's not going to be pretty if either of these things, the treatment of the Palestinians by the Israeli government and this business of the Shiite splitting, making them weaker, making it impossible to negotiate with a single Shiite entity, because now then you cannot rewrite the results of that election and say, well, there's going to be Shiite A and Shiite B. We'll just negotiate with them rather than simply a Shiite position. In that part of the world, that ain't going to fly. Old George is going to have hundreds of thousands of people with everything from shoulder-carried missiles down to rocks and sticks, except there will be so many of them, it won't matter how many of those that fall. The country thing will still run with blood, and it'll all be on George Bush's hands.
Well, I tell you what, these people have found ways to screw up situations that we didn't even think were possible. I mean, that goes back to our theory that these are not evil geniuses. These are rotten, dumbass street punks. And they are. They're not. They think they're this is high-flown strategery to them. And
they put all their best minds into getting elected. They put all their best minds into corrupting the elective process in the United States. They put all their best minds into cheating Americans out of the vote. They don't put any thinkers into foreign policy. They just, you know, if it doesn't fit, get a bigger hammer.
Oh, God.
Let's take a break. What do you think?
they make me crazy, David. They just make me nuts. And and you know, there are people who prop them up. You know, we were talking about McCain a few minutes ago, for Christ's sakes. And for, what, 8 years now? 6 years? Yeah, about 8 years. Flush Flimball has been sliming McCain. Well, now that he's on the Sky Angel Network with his little blab fest to Mooney University, because we all know that Jerry Falwell University was propped up and bought partially by Reverend Moon, you know, all these little Mooney graduates he's going to speak to. Now that that's been picked up by Sky Angel Network, we can see pretty clearly that the religious right is, you know, they've been given their marching orders by their Pope. Okay, I mean, Jerry Falwell is the evangelical community's Il Papa, for all intents and purposes, and you know, now that McCain's going to make kissy face, it's okay to swear that he is the guy to usher in the new conservative revolution, right?
He's this kind-hearted maverick war hero that has smooched more booty and endured more indignity and corrupted himself completely. How can you trust a guy that could take what he's taken from George W. Bush or the whole Bush family, for that matter?
Right.
How could you trust? You know, when the lights are dim and there's only that guy and two or three important cabinet officers. I want that guy making big decisions.
Yeah, no.
Get it. Forget it.
I can find a drunk at the corner of the bar that'll do better.
I can find the proverbial Democratic yellow dog and be a lot more comfortable.
Amen to that. David, thanks so much.
Oh, thank you, Bob. Enjoy the show.
Oh, it's made better by your presence.
Nay, nay. It's all those new callers that are doing it.
Thanks.
Talk to you later.
Bye now. And rolling right along, Bob in North Dakota. Hey, Bob, you're head on.
Hey.
How are you?
I'm here.
Good.
And so are they. All my tormentors in, what do you call that thing again, chat room?
Tormentors?
Oh, aren't they?
No.
Oh, my friends.
Yes.
Well, friends can be tormentors at times. And exactly which part of the world do you live in?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Well, don't you know, right?
Well, yeah, you live up there where they blow the tops off your hills.
That's right.
Make your people suffer in a moonscape?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, but it wasn't before. And who did that?
Bob, don't quiz me. I know who did it.
Yeah, so do I.
Massey Energy did it. Arch Cole did it.
A lot of other people did it, too.
Well, sure, there was government...
No, those that sat on the sidelines and didn't listen and got into themselves.
Well, no, see, that's the thing. There's not a lot of sideline sitters where they're blowing up the mountains right now.
No.
That's why Coal River Mountain Watch exists. That's why...
I know.
That's why my pals down at...
What was that wonderful place you sent me to purchase... Mountaintop removal?
Falling Mountain Music.
Falling Mountain Music.
FallingMountain.com.
Yeah. And people have to realize that they're not just doing it in your neighborhood, you know?
Oh, sure. There are pits out west that are as big as some small towns in this state.
Sometimes deeper. But, hey, Mike, I've got to grab a different phone here. Hang on a second.
Well, Bob.
Okay. You're going off? Just a moment.
I don't want to go beep, beep, beep.
Oh, I thought you meant another phone was ringing. Okay.
Oh, no.
Okay, yeah, that's fine. That's fine.
My phone was the one I was holding on to while I was listening to David up there. And David's right, okay? David's got it straight. But I was just saying, what part of the world do you live in?
Well, I'm in the Appalachians.
No, I live in the whole damn thing.
Well, okay, that's true, too.
I mean, the monkey up there in the White House says the globe's warming, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, but it doesn't just affect the monkey in the White House, does it?
No, I know what you're getting at. It's the sentiment that was expressed by John Donne when he said, I am a part of the whole.
I am a part of the whole. And everything that I do has consequences. Everything. It doesn't matter if I just, I could sit on the sidelines and say, no, I'm just a bystander. I'm just watching the game. I'm just one of them guys up in the Coliseum watching the gladiators go at it until one of them is murdered by the other one. But it's not me. I'm not there. I'm up here and I'm getting bread and what was that thing that circuses?
Yeah, right? Circuses, sure.
Yeah. I'm just sitting here watching Fox News or MSNBC or whatever you're watching. Shut it off. I listened to The Other Side this last weekend.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah, I listened to Ed Asner, and he hates them damn liberal Democrats.
No, Ed Asner?
Yeah.
Wait, Ed Asner is a liberal Democrat.
No, he isn't. No. No, he's not. He is a conservative. He's always been a conservative.
No. I think you're talking about somebody else and thinking about it.
No, I'm talking about Ed Asner and Mary Tyler Moore.
Yeah.
Yeah. Same Ed Asner.
Ed Asner's a big lefty.
No. No, he's not a lefty. He's a conservative. But he has values, okay?
Okay.
There is another stream out there, and sometimes I listen to it. It's RBN, but I'm not going to tell
people. I understand.
Yeah. But there are a lot of conservatives that have the same, I'm trying to think of the word. They have the same connections, not the same values, but the same connections that we have, okay?
Yeah.
Some of them have their faith and they have their beliefs, but if they are truly faithful, that's good. But if they just have beliefs, we've talked about that little word before, and it's a little word. It's kind of like a little man, a little monkey, little squatting thing that sits on our Constitution, which is just words, or just a, I don't know, what do you call it?
GD piece of paper.
GD piece of paper. Yeah, and he's a godly man? That he would say that it's a GD piece of paper?
Oh, yeah, well, that godly man also said, F. Saddam, we're taking him out.
Oh, he said the
yeah, somewhere around March.
The F-bomb. Put the F-bomb on.
Yeah, it was Saddam. Reported like March, April, May 2002, a year before, back when he was saying, war is the last option,
I think he put it before he was ever elected. I think he put it before his daddy. I mean, I think he has this, I heard it today, that he thinks that he is the emperor of the earth.
Huh?
Yes. He believes himself to be George W.
Caesar.
Emperor. Not emperor of America. Emperor of the world. Okay? Now, when you get to that point, Bob, when you think you are in, just this omnipotent thing that sits up there above everybody, is it not incumbent upon us to You know, throw him in a straitjacket, take him off to a...
Well, it was incumbent on us to do that, Bob, when he was standing there in Israel saying, God told me to strike at Afghanistan, and I did, and God told me to strike Iraq. You know, anybody else in the world that says God's talking to him, we give him medicine.
Absolutely.
Make the and little voices go away.
It is Wednesday, is it not, Bob?
It is Wednesday.
It is prayer night.
It is prayer meeting.
Yeah, it's prayer meeting night. I wasn't able to hook in early in the show because I was burning off Tom Hartman. I was making a I wasn't burning it.
I understand. Like, yeah, I get that.
I was making a disc.
Yeah, I speak the lingo.
Okay, and so I could spread his message. And he was talking with some very and he's very eloquent. I am not, and you're passionate like me, Bob. And that's why I love you. I really do. Love you because you're passionate and you're a firebrand, just one ember shy of Malloy. And I figure when he goes, you'll take his place.
I don't want to take anybody's place.
No. Malloy is like me. We will shuffle off this mortal coil. And I'm looking forward to bantering with that old bastard. I really am. Okay. I mean, I could sit down with him on any street in hell and watch the Republicans shuffle around trying to say, why are we here? Why are we here? They belong here better than us.
You sound like the extra verse that was never published to Gunga Din, Bob. You know that he'll be sitting on the coals giving drink to poor damn souls, and I'll get a swig in hell from Gunga Din.
That's right.
Hey, Bob, we got to hit it, brother.
I understand. Hey. To my friends in the chat room, I love y'all. It was wonderful. I enjoyed it. Nanette sent me and we had a banner back and forth. I just don't understand it as well as you folks. So excuse me when I get passionate. And Bob, don't ever call me. What was that? You called me. What was that? Sergeant Carter?
I didn't call you Sergeant Carter.
Oh, I thought you were saying.
Oh, jeez, Bob.
I thought that came from
you. We don't have time to do this on the air, brother.
All right.
Got to hit the break.
Later.
Later.
Yeah,
bye.
Bye. Bye.
let's go to the news. Okay. I like that. This is Head On. I'm Bob Kincaid.
Dad, let's sing that bedtime song.
Rock-a-bye, baby, by Newton's treetop. His first law of motion, make sure you won't stop. The same rules of physics apply to a ball, while gravity is a force that makes things fall.
By the sixth grade, many girls lose interest in math and science, but it's never too early to set your daughter's future in motion. For some simple ideas, go to girlsgotech.org.
A public service announcement brought to you by Girl Scouts of USA and Ad Council.
Head On Radio News, I'm John Fox. The Bush administration official charged with preying on a child for sex has waived extradition. Brian Doyle agreed to be transferred from Maryland to Florida. He was arrested Monday as part of a sting operation. Doyle, a press officer for the Department of Homeland Security, solicited sex from someone online he thought was a 14-year-old girl. He faces 7 counts of seducing a child, plus charges of sending improper materials to a minor. The Capitol Hill police are ratcheting up the war of words in the Cynthia McKinney matter. A Capitol Police spokesman accused Congresswoman McKinney of acting like, quote, the high and haughty, unquote. Capitol Police Chief Terrence Gaynor said McKinney should have stopped when his officer grabbed her from behind. McKinney still believes the matter is more about racial profiling than anything else. She called the incident, quote, much ado about a hairdo, unquote. It's a little like closing the barn door after the horses are gone, but four Republicans are joining 79 Democrats in the House of Representatives to demand a debate about the Iraq War. The House members are demanding that the debate be sent to the House floor over the objection of the Republican leadership. The group needs a total of 218 signatures in order to have the debate. Workers in Indonesia protested Tuesday. The working people showed their displeasure at their government's attempts to make it harder for them to exist. A new labor bill in Indonesia tries to take away those citizens' rights to go on strike. It also seeks to cut wages and benefits. Labor unions in the country say the bill allows too much outsourcing and lets employers circumvent unions. The Pentagon is complaining about a video making the rounds on the internet in the Middle East that shows people pulling a part of a body out of a crashed American helicopter. The Defense Department said Tuesday that it is outraged that, quote, the terrorists continue to demonstrate their immoral disregard for human dignity and life, unquote. George Bush's war on the people of Iraq has thus far claimed the lives of as many as 100,000 civilians. Amnesty International provided more evidence Tuesday that the CIA is using secret flights to kidnap and torture people in the so-called War on Terror. The report, Below the Radar, Secret Flights to Torture and Disappearance, documents case after case of CIA-sponsored misconduct involving a host of other countries, including the UK and other European nations' airspace. Amnesty's report gives evidence of more than 1,000 of the secret flights. Today in New Orleans, Mayor Ray Nagin suspended installation of FEMA trailers. Apparently, residents who would be neighbors of the Katrina survivors objected to locating the trailers so close to affluent neighborhoods. One resident, Edward Markle, said, quote, I won't be able to take a bath without them seeing me, unquote. This is news on the Horn.
The major record labels say that downloading music from the internet is stealing. But according to these people, making a mixtape for your friend is stealing too. So is making a tape of a radio show.
Home radio. We play the songs that sound more like everyone else than anyone else.
When a rock band plays an AC/DC cover at a bar that doesn't pay ASCAP, that's stealing. Or have you ever sung Happy Birthday to your friend at a restaurant?
Warning!
Happy Birthday is copyrighted, so if you're singing in a public place, you better be paying royalties, or you'll be stealing music.
Man down!
Does all this stuff about stealing music sound absurd? Would you rather have a world where our music culture wasn't the intellectual property of five corporations? Then stop giving them your money, and make sure your friends and family don't either. Better yet, try burning them a CD. If we pull the plug on major labels, music gets better. Find out more about what you can do. Check out downhillbattle.org.
Determined not to leave quietly, disgraced and resigning Congressman Tom DeLay said he would file ethics charges against Cynthia McKinney if no other congressman does for the incident she had with Capitol Police. DeLay was apparently incensed that no ethics complaint had been filed, saying, quote, had it been Tom DeLay, the ethics committee would have met the next day, unquote. A report released today by Amnesty International documents the use of front companies and private aircraft for the action of rendition, which is essentially government-sanctioned kidnapping and transport to secret prisons. The report detailed the plight of three Yemeni nationals who were sent to a number of secret prisons over the course of 18 months. They reported as saying all the guards at each location were Americans. Apple Computer unveiled software today that would enable its Mac operating system to run, yes, that's right, Windows XP. The computer program called Boot Camp would require the user to reboot the system to switch between Mac and Windows operating systems. The computer company hopes that this will help make it more than its usual 3 or 4% market share. Your tax dollars at work. In 2005, members of Congress squandered more of your money. Citizens Against Government Waste released its 2006 Congressional Pig Book Tuesday. The report details a host of pet projects congressmen use to appease their constituents. Some of the highlights? Several million dollars went to help finance the World Toilet Summit. $500,000 went for a teapot museum in Sparta, North Carolina. In all, the report documents over $13 billion worth of wasted money. And that's the news on the Horn, the Head-On Radio Network. I'm John Fox.
Tonight's final hour of Head On begins now. 1-877-4-HEAD-ON. That's 1-877-443-2366. Here's Buck.
Oh, I think we've got gremlins tonight or something. Agnes, you can't say that on the radio. Mic was open. See,
Sorry.
I understand. You heard the phone number there. If you want to get in on it all, feel free to jump in. But there were a few things I wanted to make sure that we hit tonight. Not the least of which, this is what happens. I've been sitting on a story and saving it because I save stories for prayer meeting night. This is when, it's not even a millionth of a percent as funny as the Daily Show's This Week in God. But I like to save some of the more religiously bizarre stories for Wednesday nights for prayer meeting. And so there was a stunning topic for prayer meeting night in the form of a piece in Sunday's Washington Post, authored by noted conservative architect Kevin Phillips. Right? Yeah. And it had to do with it's sort of tied in with his new book that's been out for a few weeks now, American Theocracy. In it, he laid out a point by point by point condemnation of the religion industry's just death grip on the Republican Party. Now, what happened, I took my little highlighter out and I highlighted sentences and wrote little comments in the margins and I lost it. Sure I did. But if you want to, I imagine it's probably still available. We're only 3 days out from it. Go to the Washington Post. Read that essay. And just look up Phillips. It'll be there. But I got to tell you, I'm conflicted over it because everything he said was true. He's the one who coined the phrase Sunbelt. He's the one who predicted that the South would become a Republican bastion. And he is the author, in large part, of Richard Nixon's so-called Southern strategy. The Southern strategy was polite parlor talk for let's make sure that the white people are scared to death of the black people. It was nothing but naked racism in its ugliest form. It was hitched away from George Wallace, to be quite honest, and to a certain extent Lester Maddox and some of those other evil old so-called conservative Southerners. And Mr. Phillips makes a damn good case that these people run the risk of destroying not only this nation, but this world. But here's the hitch. I felt really vindicated reading this coming from such a great conservative mind. Now, I'm sure he's persona non grata in so-called conservative circles anymore. But, of course, Phillips created what he was complaining about. And that smacks of hypocrisy to me. He helped make everything that he is now decrying. It's the same thing with, Lou Dobbs. I have no patience with these people who say, George Bush is destroying America. Well, by God, 6 years ago, 7 years ago, you were out there beating the drum for George Bush. Every tawdry story that came down the pike, Lou Dobbs was more than happy to repeat about Al Gore or John Kerry, regardless of whether or not it was true. There's a legal doctrine when you take the classes, and there's a legal doctrine called unclean hands. And unclean hands says that if you have done wrong in the first place and the wrong that you've done has helped put you in the spot that you're in, you're not going to be heard by a judge to complain about the spot that you're in. The court's going to look at you and say, wow, you've got unclean hands. Screw you. Go away. And that really is kind of where I am with people like Mr. Phillips and Mr. Dobbs. You made this mess. Do not try to extricate yourself from it by saying, I don't like it now. You know, and the same thing applies, and some of it is a con. You know, it applies to Michael Savage. Michael Savage, from time to time, now goes out and talks about what a pinhead George Bush is. Now, I got raked over the coals once upon a time, back in the bad old broadcast radio days, for referring to George Bush as a pinhead. Now it's routinely done by the people who were busy licking his feet at the same time that I was pointing that very salient fact out, that we were about to let the United States of America be run by a pinhead. So understand, it's a con. It's a means of maintaining position. Because Michael Savage does not know where in the hell he's going to go once everything comes crashing down. Except the only thing he can do is to say, well, they got it wrong. And the same thing, you know, it's coming from Dobbs and it's coming from Phillips. Well, you know, George Bush got it wrong. He spends money like a drunken sailor. He's not really a conservative. Conservatism is really the answer for America. We've had about all the conservatism we can stand. Under Harding and Coolidge and Hoover, we had conservatism out the gazoo. We got a Great Depression out of it that was partially responsible for the Second World War. Sure. But like I've said, you know, that generation's not here to remind us anymore about the Republicans' three meals a day. Oatmeal, skip a meal, and miss a meal. Not at all. So pardon me if I don't have any sympathy for Messrs. Phillips and Dobbs and God knows that filthy, savage wiener. Then, you know, I get such a charge out of going to Newsmax. Whoever the little right-wing freak was that signed me up for it is... I appreciate it, because speaking of Michael Savage, I wouldn't know about this had I not gone there. Savage remarks anger Catholics. Savage remarks anger Catholics. The Catholic League, a civil rights group, this is the gang that's run by William Donahue, this fuming madman, is, oddly enough, fuming mad over comments made by talk radio star Michael Savage last week. March 28th. Savage said, "It's a pig story. It's Animal Farm all over again. And also, make no bones about it, it's the greedy Catholic Church that was behind it, because the people of America walked away from the molesters' dens, and they need to bring in people from the third world who are still gullible enough to sit there and listen to the molesters."
The Roman Catholic Church was behind this. The Roman Catholic Church started this a year ago. The Roman Catholic Church flooded the streets because they cannot get parishioners anymore amongst educated white people who have caught on to the racket, and instead they need to import dummies to sit into church pews. That's the story, and it is not difficult for you to understand. I'm telling you the truth. It's all about greed. It's greed at the top of the Catholic Church. Make no mistake about why this is happening. This has nothing to do with compassion for Mexican workers. This has nothing to do with fairness for Mexican workers. It has to do with the greed. That's all there is to it. And that includes the Catholic Church pigs. And if you don't like it, don't listen to the show. I really don't care anymore. I'm not going to be duped by this sanctimonious garbage that all churches are good and that the institution itself is good. Bah humbug. The institution is rotten from the top to the bottom.
You did that way too well.
And of course, and yet, you know, humble, meek little Bob Kincaid, I get grief because I occasionally challenge religious institutions on their hypocrisy. But, of course, this is positioning. See, this is the part where Penn and Teller come out and explain to you how the magic trick works. This is positioning. This is him saying that he's still relevant.
An outraged Bill Donahue, president of the Catholic League, has demanded an apology. I was scheduled to be on with Mike Savage the day he savaged the Catholic Church and made bigoted comments about Latinos. But in the pre-interview, which occurred just a half a... I let a producer know that I did not share the host's position.
Welcome to the wrestling match. Let's go to the phones. Gerard is with us from Indiana. Hey, Gerard, you're head on.
Hey, Bob, how you doing?
I'm doing good. You?
No, not bad. I called because I wanted to... I came across an article. This is kind of old now. It's from the January of the Nation magazine, but I have a kind of job where I have to, I finally got a day off, so I caught up on my reading, and I came across this, and I thought of you, so I just wanted to, it's an article by William, I want to say Greeter or Greiter.
Yeah, Bill Greiter.
Yeah. It talks about the Apollo Alliance.
Yes.
I don't know if you know of them.
Yes.
For people who don't know, they're kind of following in the footsteps, I think, or at least trying to get economically feasible environmentalism as a drive in our society. I remember both Clinton and, of course, Al Gore talking about that in their campaigns. And the thing I wanted to point out that really struck me in this article is that just this last paragraph, it's just a couple sentences. I just wanted to read it for you.
Okay, go right ahead.
There's a quote first that says, "We have a lot of examples where we have gotten rid of the wedge." He's talking about the wedge, supposed political wedge between environmentalists and organized labor. And this is Jeff Rickert, the Apollo Alliance's acting executive director.
Mm-hmm.
And he says, in a few cases where, in a few cases we have failed. It's still the beginning, but I think we've gotten past the toughest patch. In one, and this is Greiter now, in one notable example, the United Mine Workers Union, whose coal miners are the most directly threatened by climate change reform, has officially acknowledged that global warming must be addressed. That might seem like a small step, but it puts the UMW, United Mine Workers Union, out in front of ExxonMobil. And I guess in the context of your, the author, the guest you interviewed earlier, it kind of struck me that those coal miners, I know from your part of the world, are kind of in the same, I think it could be said that they're kind of in the same place as the rescuers in Nazi Europe, in that they are thinking of themselves or thinking beyond themselves and looking at the bigger picture.
That's a very interesting perspective, Gerard, and I think it's probably very true as well, because we use, when you get right down to it, we pump a lot more greenhouse gases into the air as a direct result of coal in this country, at least, than we do by virtue of oil or gas.
Yeah, I think that when you have people like the United Mine Workers Union coming out and acknowledging that, you know, that's a thing that's so important. I mean, those guys are, I always say that's, you know, they're where the rubber hits the road. And, you know, of course, the mining companies, they're going to fuss and fume about regulations, and our dear leader has done his best to nullify any regulations that he could.
Oh, yeah. What is it? Healthy forests and clear skies.
But, you know, talking about mine workers, you know, with a company order, it's a choice of making maybe a few percent less in profit in a year. With a coal miner, I would think that it could be, you know, deciding whether to put gas in the car to take the kid to school or feed the kid.
There's a lot of truth in that. And of course, that's the UMW. The sad thing, though, is that even in this state, which used to be, are you much of a football fan, Gerard, at all?
Oh, yeah.
You know who Sam Huff is?
Or was
one of the greatest linebackers ever to play the game. He once said that growing up in West Virginia, that there were two pictures hanging on the wall. One was John F. Kennedy, and the other was, Jesus Christ. Or maybe it was FDR and Jesus Christ. But the third part of that Holy Trinity was John L. Lewis.
Oh, yeah.
And the thing that this goes back to what they're not, even in West Virginia, that was such a bastion of the UMW. The UMW is a shrinking presence here.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it is stirring to see them take that kind of a stand. What I wish they would do is get busy organizing a little bit harder and make that stand a little bit more viable. But, you know, a lot of organized labor has signed off on the plans put forward by the Apollo Alliance, and that's ApolloAlliance.org, isn't it?
Yeah, they didn't list the site in the article, but I would imagine that would work.
Yeah, ApolloAlliance.org, it's a realistic plan for reinvigorating this nation without having to bomb anybody.
Right.
And the outcome of, you know, they named it Apollo Alliance because it's the kind of bold vision that yielded us the moon landing via the Apollo,
right,
NASA program.
Yeah, it's taken from JFK's initiative in the early 60s.
Right.
Yeah. Now, do you guys down there, I can't remember my states. are you getting windmills up there in the mountains?
We're trying. Now, see, that's another very interesting topic, Gerard, because we've got a windmill farm planned in Greenbrier County.
I heard about that on NPR the other day.
It's going to be a good thing. But there's a group of so-called environmentalists. I personally think they're a bunch of astroturfers myself, you know, not real grassroots. I think they're probably funded by a couple of the energy corporations, the coal corporations. They're saying, you know, oh, we can't have windmills in Greenbrier County because it'll spoil our viewscape.
Oh, geez.
Now, bear in mind, these windmills are going to be on a 15-mile ridge line that has already been strip mined, that is not visible from anywhere unless you mean to see them.
Yeah, probably no vegetation or trees to be?
Grass.
Okay.
You know, I mean, that's the nature of a recovered, so-called reclaimed strip mine. It'll never grow a tree. It'll never grow a crop. It'll never grow anything but scrub grass. And they want, you know, there's plans for something on the order of 200 of these windmills along this 15-mile stretch. It's going to provide tons of jobs, and they're going to be good jobs. They've already signed the project labor agreements, I do believe.
Well, that's kind of the impetus between this power alliance too, is that they want, you know, while we've got the multinational corporations trying to drive wages down and actually drive, you know, skilled jobs away, this organization's, and there's apparently a lot of state governors who have signed up on this thing, and, you know, they're trying to make it so it creates highly skilled jobs where, you know, a person could actually feed a family on
right
what they're making.
And, I think they said this wind farm will be sufficient to supply power to 50,000 homes. And, you know, that the biggest thing is that power will go out of this state, Gerard.
Uh-huh.
And that's the sad part of it. I think if it was under my power to do so, I'd say, you know, great, build your wind farm, but you have to dedicate some portion of it to West Virginia consumers who want to heat and power their homes in a green fashion.
Sure.
So, but people are, you know, people are fighting this thing tooth and toenail, and it makes me crazy. And some of my friends who oppose work against mountaintop removal have said to me, you know, we'd love to have our mountains and we'd love to have windmills on top of them as opposed to not having mountains anymore.
Mm-hmm.
You know, these fake environmentalists in Greenbrier County need to understand, you know, they need to go down and look at the moonscapes like Bob mentioned a little bit ago. Go look at the moonscapes and say, well, you know, okay, you can have that instead of windmills. Choose.
Yeah. Well, I just wanted to bring that up, and I appreciate you having, I've forgotten his name, but the author you had on earlier.
Yeah, Mark Klempner.
Yeah. I kind of my ancestry, I'm Dutch and Swedish, and most of my immediate ancestors were already here and established before that time in history where we were over here already, but we do have, you know, and when I hear names with straw on the end or,
right,
or Corrie ten Boom or people like that, it strikes a chord with me because my immediate ancestors weren't there, but I think if I went back far enough, I'd certainly find somebody.
It's still the old country.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And the stories that are told in this, Gerard, are just brilliant. And when you see it, it's so neat. And on at least on the hardcover copy that I have, there are photographs of four young people. I mean, these weren't even people my age, your age. These were kids in their late teens, early 20s, maybe their 30s at best. And they, you know, they determined that they were not going to watch murder take place.
Yeah.
State-sanctioned murder. And then you flip the book over, and you see the same four people as they presently are,
mm-hmm.
And it's stirring. So, you know, it's a great read if you want to, and it's wonderful to have on your bookshelf because it's something you can come back to again and again.
You know, and I found it interesting what he said about what those people were saying about, you know, as tough as it was, they look back and think that was probably one of the best times in their lives.
It defined every day that followed.
Yeah. You know, and I know you're not big on Ralph Nader, but he says the same thing in one of his books. But, you know, he says when people get out and get involved and say, hey, this ain't going to fly anymore, most of them report that it lifts their depression. It makes them feel vital. It makes them feel alive. You know, we just got to keep doing it.
I think you're right. Gerard, thanks so much. I always enjoy your calls.
All right. Take care, buddy.
Have a good night.
Yeah.
Bye now.
Bye.
And let's see. Agnes, you want to roll on or you want to take a quick break?
Take a quick break.
Okay. We'll take a quick break. Yeah, one of these days we'll build a booth and there'll be... But for right now, you hear the all the nuts and bolts. I'm Bob Kincaid. This is Prayer Meeting Night on Head On.
callar y que no me entiendas. Eres la reina en cualquier lugar y yo me dejo si tú quieres jugar. Pero más es amar.
On the last Fourth Estate, we heard from Robert Fisk.
What has now become a habit of compromising on the semantics of reporting in order to avoid criticism. You know, if you call a Jewish settlement or neighborhood a colony, you'll be criticized and called potentially anti-Semitic.
And a little bit of activist history and the Red Scare.
On the line with us right now, we have Kate Fossil, biographer of Anne Braden.
You know, I got interested in Anne's life because of her being a white Southern voice against racism. And
leave it to our listeners to ring up and keep it light.
I don't either. And, you know, Bruce is concerned about the remote control for his DVD player. I mean, I'm thinking about getting rid of the remote control on my blow-up doll. I mean, you know.
What's his name?
I never kiss and tell.
FourthEstateRadio.com.
Hi, this is Joe Vecchio, voice of the working man's thinking man, and I'm sick and tired of watching corporate thugs steal our money, steal our freedoms, and use propaganda to turn us against each other. We live in a world that's turned against working people in every country, and I say enough is enough. It's time to take back the airwaves, time for us to stand up to corporate power and corporate greed, time to put aside all our differences and face our common enemies, and time to take back control of our government. So if you feel like I do, then I want you to join me for the premiere of the Cup of Joe radio show Saturday, April 8th, 2006, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network. It's the show your bosses don't want you to listen to. It's the wave of the future, the voice of the resistance, the truth that will set you free. So join me via streaming audio Saturday, April 8th, from 8 to 10 p.m. on the Head On Radio Network.
A liberal light in the conservative darkness. Here's Bob Kincaid.
Downhill to the end of the show. I think Agnes loves this song. Get off the cross because I need the wood. Yeah. While you're up on the cross, I'll be on the veranda having a cocktail. Something I noticed in the general rundown of the news headlines today. Did you catch it? They're finally going to release the recordings from the lone black box that was recovered from the attacks of September the 11th. Yeah, I know. I don't, it's too late in the program to turn this into a 9/11 discussion. I don't want to do it. But, yeah, it's the black box from the plane that went down in Pennsylvania. Now, bear in mind, there are two black boxes. One's a data recorder and one's a voice recorder. I assume they mean the voice recorder. Anybody want to bet what's going to be on it? I know what's going to be on it. It's going to be all full of screaming and voices speaking Arabic. And in the background, maybe you're going to hear somebody yell, "Let's roll!" as a means of verifying that that's how the plane went down. Now, I don't know diddly about the specifics of the rest of the whole day. I know that plane was shot down. Okay? That plane was shot down. It wasn't plunged into the earth. No, sir. Not at all. Let's go back to the phones. David's been waiting. David with us from Maine. Hey, David, you're head on.
Good evening, Bob. How are you?
I'm doing well. Yourself?
Yeah, I'm doing all right. Since it's never too late to do a 9/11 discussion, never. And I just want to say this. I think that people should realize one thing, is that I got into a heated debate with my mom about this. I said, Mom, you know, I don't care what your position on 9/11 is, and I wish a lot of skeptics would say this, but the fact is the circumstantial evidence is on the table, and it hasn't been discussed. It's been gagged. And what I want to say is that there are people out there that a lot of people don't realize. I don't know if you're familiar with William Rodriguez. He was the last guy out of the tower. Rescued 14 people from the building. Imagine that.
Yes, is he the one that said he heard the bombs going off?
Yeah, he heard the bombs going off. He visited the president. He tried to tell the 9/11 commission that there were 17 other witnesses.
Is he the same guy, David, that is now participating in this 9/11 inquiry in Venezuela?
Yep, that's the guy right there.
Thought it. Yeah, okay.
And my thing is, and anyways, as he was talking on the radio, he has a really he believes that he was saved because of the spiritual reason, and he needs to do this, and he needs to get out there, and he's just been going nonstop at it. And I may not have the same spiritual beliefs, but the thing is that I just find it funny that nobody, not even Fox, anybody just wants to hear what he has to say, and he's this hero, and he was on the 9/11 commission, and it just seems to me that just a lot of people, it's just like a sleight of hand. And then that's another thing. I just found this out that one of the reasons he got to New York was he was an illusionist for the Amazing Randy.
Really?
Yeah, and I found that kind of funny.
Well, you know, the Amazing Randy is pretty interesting in his own right, because he's the ultimate skeptic.
Right.
He's the one that has, what is it, the $1 million reward out there for anyone who can prove real supernatural powers. And nobody's won it yet, because again, he knows all the hoodoo.
Yeah, I think the whole thing, the thing that needs to be brought and to be said just over and over, is the fact that there were, and he said this last night. So he said there are 17 other witnesses who heard the explosives. Now that's circumstantial evidence beyond the pale. For me, right there, I say okay. Time to have a town square investigation trial wherever we can have it.
Well, yeah, I mean, sure. Because the one thing I'm certain of, David, is that, you know, we were not told the truth. We were not in any sort of judicial truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth approach.
But 9/11 people need to realize this, is that when they open this Pandora's box and they side with the people that they're siding with, you have to realize this, is that everyone has a different motive, and you're not probably going to get the results you want.
I think that's very true.
Because what's going to come out is, I noticed on one of the programs that I was listening to, and they had him on Lionel, and I won't give their names out because, you know, that's
yeah
whatever. But they were really, really hard on the issue of this, and they had really facts and whatnot. Then you go to their site, and they have a section on immigration being a disease to this country.
Oh, I know.
This right here, this inherent fear, this inherent... These are the people that really do have a sad disease, because it's constant. It's like you think you're an American, and this is all there is, and that's all. And then everything else, it doesn't matter, because I'm an American, and you know what? You were made to think that. You were modified to think that this nation, that's the only thing that matters, and everything else, forget it. They don't. This is our place, and I'm not an immigrant. Just because I was born here. You know what? It's like playing a kickball or something.
Well, sure, it is. And I mean, if you go back in history, and I'm not going to make anybody's eyeballs roll back in their head. I'm not going to go off on one of my things. But the fact of the matter is, throughout history, if a people come in and slaughter everybody who's living there and then start living there, a couple of generations later they call themselves natives. The one that comes to mind is Normandy in France. Okay? The reason it's Normandy, you probably know this, is because Norman is a francophone way of referring to a Viking.
Is it now?
The Vikings raped, pillaged, burnt, plundered, burgled, stole, and killed their way all around the rim of Northern Europe. And the people in that area finally said, look, maybe if we give them the damn land, let them settle down, they'll quit being Vikings. And they did. And then, you know, a few hundred years later, they're in the kingdom of the two Sicilies. And they're raping and killing and pillaging and murdering in the Middle East. But yeah, I mean, that's us. That's any human being. You know, if you come in, you kill everybody, and then you live there, pretty soon you're a native.
Which brings me to an interesting thing. I was watching the Chronicles of Narnia. I just have to say this because it's so funny.
Okay.
I was watching the Chronicles of Narnia, Walt Disney, and it was done all right, you know. They did what the best they could with the novel. But one thing I noticed that was really interesting about it, I wonder how C.S. Lewis would react to this, Mr. Theologian himself.
Right.
There was no blood on the swords. There was no blood anywhere.
No, just go right in, pull right out, clean as a whistle.
There was no blood anywhere, and it's like, well, Disney, how can you do this?
Yeah, self-cleaning victims.
And, you know, I just realized something, that this is what is going to happen if people don't realize. If you don't realize the little details, we'll have a sanitized media, and people will think. In wars, people don't bleed; they just fall down.
Just like. Well, exactly. Well, you know, and then that's the complaint that's been levied by a lot of the TV violence people, that Hillary Clinton's leading the charge against video game violence because they think, and there may be some truth in it, that this somehow sanitizes killing. It occurs in the religion industry. Since this is Wednesday night, I have to get in a religion thing. It occurs in the religion industry when they talk about, you know, and after Jesus comes, we get to put the Jews to the sword. And they don't understand that that is a bloody business. I guess we haven't used swords in so long that we don't understand what profound mauling instruments that they are.
And just imagine what grenade launchers and daisy cutters and all of that looks like.
Sure, it's the same philosophy behind the reason that we are not allowed to see the planes land at Dover. We are not allowed to see the bodies come home. We're not allowed to see the flag-draped coffin. And I remember in the early days of the war, David, if you tried to show somebody a file footage picture of one of the little babies that we had blown into its constituent parts, you know, look, it's a baby stuck to the wall, then that's Al Jazeera's propaganda.
So you know what we have to do instead, Bob, if we can't do that? We have to expose the sleight of handers. I don't know if you've ever been to a site, Tom Harmon mentioned it, called theyrule.net.
No.
It's a great site. You go to it, you click on a corporation, then this huge animated family tree opens up of all the people involved in that corporation.
Oh, that could be handy.
It's great, I'm telling you. I gotta send you that so you can just see it, all the people. I think we need to.
Oh, I've written it down. I'll go there.
I think we need to, as people, to discuss. And this might be a theme for a show sometime, the sleight of handers. The people that never get mentioned, like the people behind John Reedon. And I'm sure you're aware of the John Reedon group and what they've done with the perception of the war and whatnot.
Yeah, manipulated it, sure.
Yeah, with the flags and the...
Oh, yeah.
All of that. I mean, but I think it's time. I think that's the problem. Nobody ever thinks to get to that, like the people, the CEOs.
Well, exactly, David, because consider for a moment, how many days was it after Shock and Awe started over Baghdad and we started, you know, sticking those babies on the wall? How many days was it before the little yellow ribbon magnet started showing up on the big old gas-guzzling SUVs?
You know, if I was George Soros and I had a lot of millions and millions of dollars, I would put together a set of playing cards with all the corporate people and what they sponsor, and how much they profit from the war, just everybody that stands to gain something from every single misery on this world, and just to see what the reaction would be of people just like picking up a card and be like, "Huh, I didn't know that."
Yeah, well, exactly. You know, and like the thing with the yellow ribbons, those things are all made in China, right? So it stands, you know, and you don't just put in a call to the Wang Dang Yellow Ribbon Magnet Factory and say, you know, I need 80 million of these things yesterday. You've got to have advanced lead time to get them designed. You got to get the stamping dies. You got to get the whole thing. And that crap was on the market the day after the bomb started falling.
Well, I just wanted to say one last thing. I agree with you completely. One last thing before I go. I really got to give a thumbs down to Kurt Weldon smearing that Democrat's baby for having a house closer to it because his daughter had a tumor.
Oh, my God.
And he really went crazy. And he said in the speech, he said, well, why didn't you just get a house closer or something? And he made some weird allegation. And then Joe Simstack or whatever his name is,
mm-hmm.
he came out and he said, this is where I draw the line, Kurt. I'm telling you right now. I'll have to send you the exact quote on it, and it's just bizarre to me. Have you played that Rush Limbaugh quote yet?
Oh, which one?
The Duke University one.
Oh no, I haven't played that. In fact,
that might be good for tomorrow night.
It might indeed. In fact, I had it up to play it I think last night and didn't get around to it.
I think it's important to play for people to see in context because it shows you how somebody's mind is working on the air at that minute and how he immediately apologizes for it, and he's at the same time he's just like. Basically, burning himself at the same time. It's like he's
this. But the thing is, some of this is so Freudian that it's almost unbelievable. You know, this is the guy who had an African American caller on and told him to call him back when he got the bone out of his nose. You know, there's the stuff he said about Donovan McNabb. I'll tell you what, David. We'll go ahead and break it off for this evening. I look forward to hearing you again. I got Rush. I got this thing right here, right now.
All right, man.
All right, take care, David. Later. Bye now. This is the story that David is referring to. Flush Flimball was commenting on the story about the cancellation of the schedule and the more or less cancellation of the Duke University men's lacrosse team because there were allegations of. I know. Is there such a thing as a non-brutal rape? No, there's not. But, I mean, a particularly nasty one, just awful, 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 where the Duke University men's lacrosse team just, oh, God, what they did to this poor woman. You know, they found her fingernails pulled out, okay? But, yeah, play Flush here, honey. We'll get it here in a second. But at any rate, it was March 31st. It was last Friday. And by the same, you know, and he's done the same thing with Cynthia McKinney. What was it? Accused her of having Al Sharpton's hairdo or something. You know, there's no end to the racist garbage. But David talks about the information we're allowed to have and not allowed to have and the sleight of hand. You know, the best example of that in the world. Is this story that I've got before me right now, oddly enough, I hate to sully a perfectly good computer by going to foxnews.com, but I think it was our buddy Gene that sent this to me. In a disturbing turn, now just listen to this, in a disturbing turn of events, yeah, okay, it's disturbing. No, in a completely anticipated, expected turn of events, the Bush administration has been busted for memos that have come out, and you know, these things came out last Friday, and still, you know, how much hell and damnation are you hearing on the network news about it? Not much. A series of memos between Fox and the Bush administration talking about how to manipulate the news and what stories to run. Officials of Viacom, among others. Okay, let's go to Flush here. Listen to this.
Yeah. Why is it, do you think, that you haven't heard hardly anything from Jesse Jackson or Al Sharpton about the whole immigration thing? I mean, the silence is deafening from
the busy.
NAACP.
They're busy. They're busy. The Reverend Dax is in New Orleans. He's leading a big march there tomorrow. The march is, what is it called? The March for the Right to Return, a protected vote and reconstructions. He's trying to, they got problems down in New Orleans. They don't have voter base. And Sharpton's working on a New Orleans deal, too. He's trying to figure out how he can get involved in the deal down there at Duke with a lacrosse team raped some hoes.
But I don't think they're very happy about all of it.
That has a possibility down there. Duke thing is a possibility of being a Tawana Brawley situation. And Sharpton's got a balance. Can he afford another one of those as his life's going?
Because they raped a couple of hoes. Oh, my dear friend over at comearmageddon.blogspot.com is just going to love that. Because they raped a couple of hoes. Because, you know, after all, hoes deserve to be raped. Oh, and while we're at it, lest I forget. This is salient. Oh, where is the confounded thing? Yeah.
What is a hoe?
Yeah, well, you know, that's making, yeah, I understand. No, Yahoo, the story I found on Yahoo, I've managed to misplace it, too. I'm batting a million tonight, folks. Turns out the Bible Belt, and, you know, this comes on the heels of the story of the Bush administration dude, 50 years old plus, cruising for 14-year-olds on the Internet. And so a follow-up story, it turns out that the Bible Belt is a great place to go and get laid if you like to do it with children. Oh, this story lays out how you can fly into Atlanta, pay your money to the guy, and have sex with children as young as 10 and turn around and fly right out. And that's the Bible Belt. Yeah, the Bible Belt. Why are you not hearing about this nearly as much as you should be? Well, these memos between, I was wrong, not between Fox and the Bush administration and Viacom were leaked. And I'm reading straight from the text, calling for the media giant to focus on stories and programming choices, quote, that reinforce the administration's positions and, quote, ignore and or discredit points of view in opposition to the Bush administration's foreign policy objectives for the purposes of national security. Okay. Now, so we got that story. Oh, Democrats and key civil rights figures were quick to comment and call for congressional investigations, yada, yada, yada. There ain't gonna be one! Just like nobody's, you know, Media Matters, MediaMatters.org is where we found this soundbite of Flush. Yeah, because they raped a couple of hoes. And there's not going to be any outcry over that either. Oh, and guess what? Honey, go to the desktop. Let's go back to Chris Matthews for a minute here. There's not,
this, new,
not going to be any noise over this either.
Candidates?
No, I haven't.
Great stuff.
Really?
I'll send it to you. It's great. Yeah, it's great stuff.
Really?
Hillary, John Kerry.
It sounds like a coke
guys.
Addict. That's great stuff.
How they do. And Frank Luntz did it. And
who I like.
Hillary did not do well.
Really?
Kerry did well.
You're kidding.
I am not kidding. They didn't like Edwards. They thought he was a rich lawyer pretending to care about poor people.
Yeah.
Hillary was know-it-all. I don't know what.
Nothing worse than a woman knows.
8, 7. Thanks. I owe you one. I owe you two.
No, you don't.
Today and last night. No, yeah. I do.
I appreciate.
No, don't talk about what you owe me, okay? I'm already in enough trouble, is it? Tom DeLay, you bastard. Chris Matthews, you super duper bastard. Why is this bag allowed on the air anymore? Or at least, you know, put up a disclaimer. This program brought to you by the Republican National Committee.
Yeah, but who
leaked that? Well, Harry Shearer was the one who came up with it. Somebody leaked it. Someone is trying to let the cat out of the bag. The memos were leaked. You know, maybe these leakers, you know, you get a government leaker, George Bush wants to impanel a grand jury to see if he can stick them in
prison somewhere for telling the truth about the about this damnable administration. And we find out that they're manipulating the who is owned by Viacom? Quick. Isn't that CBS? What did the head dude at Viacom say during the 2004 elections? That it would be better if Kerry won the election, but Bush would be better for his wallet, so he was going to be voting for Bush. Do you remember that? God. Chris Matthews, I owe you one. I owe you two. Well, it's good stuff, man. It's good stuff. Hillary, yeah, they sound like gossips over the fence. Hillary didn't do so well. And did you see the dye job that she got? Oh, my God, it was just terrible.
You ain't knowing him much now.
Welcome to wrestling. We have this thing because we talk liberal, we think liberal, we read liberal, we all, that everybody else has seen this. They haven't. Is that Jim back with us? Hey, Jim, I've only got a minute, but go ahead. Yo, Jim.
Yeah, hey, Bob, how you doing?
Doing good, you?
Just a quick note here. I just want to thank the Affiliated Construction Trades Union and, you know, your program for at least being so inclusive to a certain extent that it's not divisive where the other things are.
Well, thank you, Jim.
And I'll tell you something. You know, when I watch Good Night and Good Luck, that's when American journalism was really at the height of its power, with people like Ed Murrow,
yeah,
and with Bill Shire and people like that. And, you know, we've certainly come a long way downwards since then. And I hope that, you know, perhaps this show and shows like it will begin to spring forth and to be able to continue good reporting, good reportage, and expose the different views of people, regardless of whether we like what each other says or not.
Well, I appreciate that, Jim.
It's a healthy thing.
I think it is, and we're trying to grow it every bit we can.
And remember what Alexander Pushkin said, from the sparks will come the flame.
We're blowing on that spark for all we're worth, Jim. Thanks a lot, brother. Good night.
Good night.
The show tonight, of course, was produced by my lovely wife, Agnes, announced by Brian Reznor. Randy Kerboy is our engineer. Ben Birch at WhiteRoseSociety.org maintains the stream of this program and the archives of many other wonderful liberal talk programs. Joe Vecchio at CupOfJoe.blogspot.com will be joining the Head On family Saturday night at 8.